Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of Commission, members of Council. The agenda in terms of the PowerPoint is I want to take you through the service enhancements that we have done for our customers and the additional things and measures that we're implementing. Rail service, update there, a bus service, what we're doing for our communication and customer information improvements, improvements at our stations and issues that have been raised, and then I'll close off with winter operations. Mr. Chair, members of Commission, the single most important part that everyone is locked in at OC Transpo and our great staff is taking care of the customer. Our customers have endured a lot of challenges. I know you have also. Our mission is clear, and that is to take care of our customers every step of the way and to think outside the box and bring forward ideas and suggestions that helps alleviate some of the stress that everybody's been through. So what's before you is some ideas that have come forward. As you know, we've deployed the 40 additional buses across the city. That is making great inroads in increasing reliability and addressing the capacity issues. I've heard from many of you that things are improving significantly in this area. In addition to those 40 buses, I'm announcing that we have put together a plan to deploy a dedicated R1 bus replacement fleet. It's 20 vehicles that will be dedicated to running R1 service, and I'll describe that in greater detail later on in my presentation. In addition, many of you have asked, are the O-Train ambassadors, the Red Vest folks sticking around? They are. They're going to stay as long as we need them to take care of our customers and help out every way we can. This next slide, Mr. Chair, is very, very important, and it speaks to funding the mitigation measures, the enhancements, the issues that we're doing to take care of our customers, again, which is our single most important mission that we're on. I need to clear up some of the confusion that's been out there. The budget that you're going to be hearing about from me today is not at risk. It, as the Treasurer always says, we have a requirement to bring you a balanced budget. That is what we are bringing you. We are not going to be tapping into any of those budget line items to do any of the mitigation measures that we've talked about or that we are talking about. We don't have to go into other departmental areas and mine out funds from those areas, and we don't need to do anything other than what the city manager has instructed us to do, and that's to take advantage of the project agreement that, and I'll be crystal clear on this, is very, very loaded with many rights that we have as the city to leverage those rights, and we are exercising them. We have external legal teams that have given us very solid recommendations on what we can do, and the funding of the mitigation measures is going to come from RTG-RTM. It's not going to come from other departments. It's not going to come from other areas. The budget that's before you is not at risk. And we are putting all those pieces and measures and applicable clauses together, and we'll provide you with an update at a later date as soon as we put all those pieces together. But I wanted to clear up that confusion that exists out there. In terms of rail service, over the last number of days, since last Friday, the O-Train line has been operating well with no major interruptions to our customers during the peak periods, the AM and PM peak period. I will give credit where credit is due. RTG and RTM are working very, very hard on resolving issues because they know the mission. Take care of the customers. They've gone through enough, and the thing that we need to do is have a really good rail service, which equals really good bus service. Progress, as you're going to hear from Mr. Charter in a moment, is being made on all those four issues that we've talked to you about that were the challenges, the TCMS, the doors, and so forth. And through all that, it's been unrelenting. We are continuing to hold RTG, RTM accountable for ensuring that they deliver what you have paid for, consistent, reliable train service, and that the issues are theirs to address. We are part of the oversight, very aggressive oversight. We are part of the working groups, as you'll hear, but it is crystal clear at all levels, including at the CEO level with myself and Mr. Kanellakis meeting continuously with the executives of RTG and RTM. In terms of ridership, I'm bringing you facts in terms of where we are. A lot of you have asked what's happening to our ridership. Are we seeing a decline? These are the numbers to date. September to September from last year, 3.7% higher ridership. This is overall on all modes. The preliminary estimate, Mr. Scrimgeour and his team are finalizing. October seems to be at just over 3% higher than a year ago. And year to date, when you compare the two, we're at about 0.8% higher than a period year ago. So that emphasizes that, you know, we're getting good usage on the system. We need to give them even better service so we not just keep these folks, but we attract even more. The four issues, I'm going to turn over to Troy, and then he's going to flip it back to me once he's done these. I wanted him to give you an update on the four primary issues relating to rail service. Troy?
Thank you, John. Good afternoon, Chair, councillors and transit commissioners. As mentioned at the last transit commission meeting a few weeks ago, there are four primary issues that are causing service disruptions on Line 1. They are the Train Control Monitoring System, or TCMS, Vehicle Onboard Control, or VOBC, door and switch issues. As a reminder, the TCMS is a computer on the train that is essentially the brain of the train. It monitors all the systems on board, including the sensors, the speakers, passenger announcements, the displays, as well as the traction control and braking. RTG and RTM have assembled a team of experts, including train system engineers, vehicle engineers, and system architects, who are taking a multi-pronged approach, focusing on investigating and resolving the TCMS issues, as well as identifying short-term mitigations and permanent solutions. To date, we've experienced a significant reduction in the number of occurrences as well as their associated impact on customers. As a result of updated operational procedures, we have been able to minimize the impact on customers by quickly resetting the system without the need of removing the train from service. Additionally, updated procedures used when vehicles are being launched or when they're entering service have further reduced the number of TCMS occurrences. The work continues in this regard, and the new software for containment of TCMS issues is being deployed this week. With respect to the Vehicle Onboard Controller, or VOBC, the analysis of these issues is being run in parallel with the TCMS analysis. The VOBC and the TCMS are two integrated systems that communicate continually, and therefore any adjustments made to the VOBC are dependent on the findings of the TCMS working group. The third primary cause of service disruptions is with respect to the train doors and their operation. Technical adjustments have been made to the door isolation mechanisms, and operational processes have allowed our rail operators to respond and rectify most issues with doors more timely and effectively. Staff and the TOCC continue to actively monitor and adjust the length of time that the doors are open, or in other words, the dwell times, which is having a positive effect on the number of customer interactions with doors. As a result, fewer door-related disruptions are occurring. However, when the door faults do occur, the operators in most circumstances are able to isolate the door, meaning that put that door out of service while allowing the train to continue in service with minimal delays. It is important to remember that every two-car train on Line 1 has 14 doors, and customers are encouraged to spread out along the platform and use all doors to enter and exit the trains. It has also been identified in recent weeks that there have been some instances where the doors at the rear of the train have not opened automatically. Most of these occurrences have not impacted the customer, as the doors can be remotely operated by the operator from the operator cab. Our operators do receive extensive training in remaining vigilant and alert at all times, especially when arriving at a station. They are trained to verify that all doors are open and are trained to respond should one of the doors not open as intended. The image that you see below is a snapshot of what the operator sees on their driver display unit, or what we refer to as the DDU. When a train stops at a station, the operator can see the status of each door, either open or closed. When an operator observes the doors that do not open, they have the ability to open the doors from the operator cab. RTG and RTM have added this issue to the corrective action plan and are currently investigating the cause and rectification. With respect to switches, as previously described, which is a critical component of the rail infrastructure, and it allows for the trains to move from one track to another, several corrective actions have been implemented. The winter switch covers that have been contributing to service disruptions have been removed. Additional resources in terms of guideway technicians, these are the technical staff that monitor and maintain the track, have been brought in by RTG, and enhanced monitoring activities have been initiated on elements such as the switch heaters, the switch rods, and other related track mechanisms. In addition to the four primary issues that have been causing disruptions on line one that I've just described, last week we did experience service interruptions as a result of two small breaks in the welded track rails. So to provide some context, the first photo you see shows a section of continuous welded track, which is the type of rail used on most modern railway lines, including line one and line two. This means that there are long sections of the rail that are welded together to create one continuous track for the entire length of the line. Continuous welded track allows for improved customer experience and less wear and tear on vehicles. The second photo is an example of jointed rail tracks. You can see in the center of the photo the joint as the two pieces of rail are connected, but they are not welded together. Another component of rail infrastructure is the rail fastening system, which is designed to restrict the movement of the rail. The purpose of the rail fastening system is to mitigate any gaps in the rail and reduce the likelihood of breaks. When a break occurs, the rail fastening system ensures that the rail is securely in place and trains can safely travel along the track. Essentially, the fasteners hold that rail line in place. What a customer may feel is a small bump as the train travels over that small break. Operators are trained to monitor the quality of the ride at all times, and when there is any observed changes, such as a weld break, they are to report that occurrence immediately to the control center. When reported, RTG immediately sends a guideway technician to the location to assess the situation and determine the actions to be taken. It is also important to note that weld breaks are relatively common with continuous welded rail track and can occur during extreme cold weather conditions or in rapid changes in temperature. There are numerous safety measures in place to ensure that the rail is safe for train movements. RTG, as the maintainer of a rail infrastructure and guideway, will regularly inspect the main line, will regularly inspect and maintain line one tracks. RTM conducts a minimum twice per week visual inspections. They also perform detailed inspections with measurements and track geometry equipment and uses ultrasonic rail flaw detection technology. Additionally, track teams are deployed to monitor the rail closely during periods of extreme temperatures for changes due to expansion or contraction. Line 1, like all other passenger railway tracks in Canada, are designed, certified, and approved by an engineer of record. And as I previously mentioned, operators are trained to notify the control center when there is even a minor change in the quality of the ride. There are robust reporting mechanisms in place to ensure that the safety of customers and service along line is not impacted. So on November 13th, two rail weld breaks were reported to the control center. The first break was discovered early in the morning, and the second was found midday. They were located approximately 300 meters apart from each other on the track east of Herdman Station. The breaks were approximately 25 and 27 millimeters in size and did not present a safety risk. The appropriate inspections took place and mitigations in terms of speed reductions were implemented, ensuring service continued in a safe and reliable manner. In both of these instances, the weld breaks were inspected by an RTG rail specialist, and following repairs, the rail specialist confirmed that trains were able to travel safely along and return to normal operation. Throughout the day on Wednesday, control center staff to work to ensure that a consistent service was provided. However, due to the speed reductions in the area, increased travel times of approximately 4 minutes were experienced by customers. I'll now pass things over back to Mr. Manconi.
Thanks, Troy. And Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, I wanted Troy to take the time to go through those slides because, I understand the sensitivities that are out there. This occurs, this will occur again, and it occurs in extreme temperature conditions. And get ready in the spring when the frost comes out, we'll have what's called track heave. That occurs already on your Trillium line. We go to reduced speeds and so forth. There's a whole science around this there, but Rest assured, that track is reviewed, signed off by engineers, and when it was turned over to us, was part of all the safety regimes and oversight and so forth. And again, the terminology sometimes hurts us when people hear there's a weld that let go. They thought it was catastrophic failure and so forth. It wasn't. So I wanted to take the time to share that information with you on that. I now want to talk about bus service. We are a multimodal operation. It's important that we have great bus service for everyone. And as I've said earlier, we have deployed the 40 buses across the system. They were determined where we were going to deploy those based on what we heard from your offices, from data, from supervisors, operators, control center staff, and so forth. I issued the memo last Friday to you indicating where those vehicles will be deployed. And what's very important about those 40 vehicles is they now get codified in the January service change. So sometime in January, we're going to the revised schedules. These will all be codified into that, so it'll be part of the system. Many of you have asked me, when does that occur? So sometime in January, and it will help in terms of on-time performance, capacity, and reliability, and so forth. So you have the 40 buses. They're now built into your network. If you approve the budget that's before you that I'm going to be speaking to you about, you will have another 19 additional buses, so you'll go to 59 additions to your fleet. Those will be spread across the system to improve reliability, capacity, and new connections to the line and throughout the system. And again, it goes across the entire city, and it's not just for reliability and capacity. There's also growth that we need to service, so many of you suburban councillors that have been asking for this, these 19 buses get spread across those areas, and we're going to continue to discuss with you. If you have issues, if you have things that you want to see quickly, please reach out to us. I mean, Pat's going to make the rounds again, but don't hesitate to reach out to Pat or myself, and we will meet with you to discuss any of these areas in terms of where this is going. We're moving very quickly to get the service deployed in January. We have teams working around the clock mapping all this out. So you have the 14, the 19, and on top of that, what I'm announcing today is that thanks to the great work of our staff, I have to take a moment to thank the staff. They're literally working throughout the weekends and nights, the union, our feedback from our customers and yourselves. We're going to be implementing a dedicated 20 bus fleet for replacement bus service. It will cover the AM and the PM peak. It will be deployed sometime in the first week of December. For now, they will be stationed at the baseball stadium, and I'll be very candid. It is winter. Those buses will be idling for the AM and the PM peak when they're stationed there. That's for quick and rapid deployment. The benefit we all get out of this is that we don't have to bleed off of your existing routes. So this helps in regard to if there is a train disruption. We didn't want to destabilize the 40 that we've deployed. So this is a major step in the right direction. I'm happy to report that MTO is working very positively with us. They're looking at how we can use the bus lanes on the 417. For the East End councillors, I assure you we will not be dealing with the 174-417 ramp or the Lees Avenue ramp. That's not on the table. We'll use the existing infrastructure. We don't want to cause more stress in that regard. And again, just a shout out to the unions and to our booking officers and agents and so forth and the management team. We're getting very innovative as to how we staff those 20 buses. So to recap, there's 20 buses parked at the baseball stadium, AM and PM peak Monday to Friday. So if we have a disruption on the line, we can do a rapid deployment and assist in that regard. We'll look at whether we reposition some of those further west or centrally located, but for now, that's the starting point. So you have the 40, the 19, plus these additional 20. In terms of customer service improvements, I know some of you have commented you've seen a very marked improvement in how proactive we are on Twitter and our social media in terms of using straightforward language for our customers, timely language, communicating not just when there's a problem, but also when things are okay. Our public information and media relations staff have been over helping us out at OC Transpo, and I want to thank them. They've brought forward some great ideas and additional capacity, and we're looking at other agencies in terms of what we can do to further enhance our communications with our customers. Beside the light rail vehicles, we have about 500 of them that RTM was able to secure. They're going to give us an install schedule on that. That'll cover about half the fleet, and they're looking to secure more of those units. As we get the dates for the installations and the finalization of them, I'll let you know. We're not holding back. We've told them to proceed with that and start installing as soon as they arrive. Stations, Tunney's Pasture, we have the canopy that's being assembled. That should be done the first week of December. The sewer repair at the Parliament Station, which we believe might be a potential cause of the odor in that station, should be completed by November 25th. There's a shot of the canopy, and we're going to be doing some decorative banners on the side there to cover up some of the scaffolding and make sure that it's weatherproof and so forth. In terms of the slips and falls in the stations, mats have been installed at Lyon, Parliament, and Rideau. The RTM has added extra cleaners with mops and shop vacs and so forth to pick up any residual water, and particularly on the stairs. The anti-slip coatings have commenced on the stairs and in the floors. They're scheduled to be completed November 29th. It's a little bit tricky. They have to deal with ambient temperatures between, I think, 5 and 10 degrees Celsius. So they're heating the areas and tarping them, doing them off busy periods. So you're going to start to see some of that in the stations. No, there's no defects with the stairs. It's just they got to tarp them, heat them up, and apply the special coatings. In terms of platforms, Herdman Station, customers have asked for a wider pedestrian facility, so I'll show you a picture of that right now. We accelerated that. We got what we needed from the NCC in terms of land use, so we're implementing that and should be done by the end of November. And the platform markings in terms of door entrances and so forth, by early mid-December, it's weather-dependent, and the platforms have to be free of moisture. So we're rolling on that front also. So that's a shot of Herdman. We're widening the walking surface area there. Winter operations, just very quickly. RTM is responsible for everything associated with the rail service. OC Transpo is responsible for snow clearing at the bus loops and bus platforms and so forth. I hope you've seen all the extra equipment that's deployed out there. If you go to Tunney's, you see a heavy loader. You see a sidewalk machine. There's more coming, by the way. If we get snow buildup, we'll be doing snow removal immediately. We're not waiting for nighttime operations and so forth. And we had our first snowfall on November 13th. Things went fairly well. We are exercising our full oversight rights and ensuring that RTG and RTM stays focused and over resources in winter operations to make sure that there's no issues, and we continue to have continuous improvement for the single most important thing, our customers. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That concludes the presentation. We're happy to take any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Manconi. We will go to delegations, and either there's a big list to hear what or ask questions of John Reddins, or I need to remind folks that this list is for delegations first. So, Mr. Reddins, you're first, Stuart McKay, you're second, and Ms. Sam Boswell will be third, followed by Miranda Gray. You're going to pass? Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Reddins. So then, first up will be Stuart McKay.
Mr. Chair, thank you for letting me speak today. My name is Stuart McKay, and I'm on the Board of Directors for the Ottawa Transit Riders. Our organization's mission is simple: to advocate for more reliable, more accessible, and more affordable public transit in Ottawa. Since launching our organization, we have heard one message loud and clear: that the current transit system is not working. These issues include buses not showing up, long waits between buses during peak periods and high-volume routes, and poor communication. One of our members told me of a harrowing experience that they had just last week while riding the number 6 down Bank Street. There had been a 30-minute delay between the buses. The result was a packed bus during rush hour with students, the disabled, and elderly all jammed in like cattle. Our member told me that she was frustrated and scared, and she was worried that a fistfight might break out because tempers were running so hot. It was only the professionalism and courtesy of the operator which prevented the situation from spinning out of control. Many of our members have similar stories to this one, and many of them are giving up on public transit, and that is disconcerting. Public transit means more than simply shuttling people from point A to point B. Reliable, affordable, and accessible public transit helps students get to colleges and universities so that they can gain valuable education and move up in the world. Good public transit is invaluable for those seeking stable employment so that they might lift themselves out of poverty. Good public transit is a lifeline for seniors that allows them to get out of their homes and apartments to engage with their communities. Reliable, accessible, and affordable public transit is not merely a service issue, but a human issue. But if the system is unreliable, unaffordable, and inaccessible, these opportunities will be foreclosed. Therefore, we have to do better. Ottawa Transit Riders is pleased to see that OC Transpo has taken measures to improve communication and has promised to alleviate issues with overcrowding by adding additional buses to the system. Nonetheless, Ottawa Transit Riders has several recommendations that we wish to see implemented in 2020. Over the next year, we recommend that the City and OC Transpo commit to working with local advocacy groups like the Ottawa Transit Riders, the Healthy Transportation Coalition, Ecology Ottawa, and others in order to develop a long-term strategy to grow transit ridership in Ottawa. We want improved community consultations on any upcoming changes to transit, specifically when it comes to planning bus routes, and evidence that that feedback has been incorporated. To avoid the problems that have plagued Stage 1 of the LRT, we recommend earlier consultation during the construction process of Stage 2 with local advocacy groups and the general public. Doing so would go a long way to restoring public confidence in the transit system and correct any problems before the launch of Stage 2. And we also want improved transparency and availability when it comes to performance reports coming from OC Transpo. Our last recommendation is perhaps the most broad-ranging and the most difficult to implement. Over the past few months, our organization has become extremely discouraged at the lack of collaboration between OC Transpo staff, city officials, the Transit Commission, councillors, and the public. It does not befit the leadership of a capital city of a G7 country. Too often, the city works within its own silos. And if we are going to have a public transit system worthy of our great city, then we must work together to break down those silos and engage in more collaborative governance. Let that work begin today.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Councillor Menard, you have questions for the delegation? Okay. Councillor McKenney, you have questions for the delegation?
No.
Councillor Aglett? Okay, Councillor Kavanaugh.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I was very interested when you were talking about silos. What do you see as a solution to, in terms of breaking those down?
I think there's often a bit of a paternalistic relationship that occurs with public transit in the city, where the service is implemented without any prior consultation. And I know from Mr. Manconi's presentation today that there is consultation. We hear that there is customer feedback incorporated into routes itself, but often we don't see the evidence of that consultation. Public transit only works if everybody is rowing in the same direction. And our goal as an organization is to just make sure that we all understand that good lines of communication, good consultation is helpful. And just for one example, I think a lot of the problems that we've had, specifically at the stations, could have been mitigated by a second pair of eyes, whether it be through advocacy organizations like ourselves or the general public, who could have gone in and said, perhaps these stairs need to be fixed, or perhaps this area needs to be widened. And instead of spending the valuable resources that should be plowed back into public transit now as a fix, we could have seen those issues beforehand and mitigated them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Kavanaugh. Councillor Gower. Is Councillor Gower here? Okay. All right, thank you very much for your presentation. Something for the benefit of the commission I should add here as well, I guess, is any questions to do with the contracts and the planning before the launch to do with the RTG issues and everything, and also for stage two, the planning that will go into stage two and the contracts for that. For the benefit of everybody here, that's a Fedco issue, so we're not really going to get into that here. Hopefully everybody understands why that is. We'll keep it separate from transit. So our next speaker is Ms. Sam Boswell.
Hello again. Thank you again for having us today. I actually was tempted just to point at Stuart and say what he said, because we certainly are in strong agreement on the board about what needs to happen. So I will reiterate a little bit of what his messages were. I have felt for a long time, even before I got involved with the Ottawa Transit Riders Group on the board, that the city does work in silos. That's a good way of putting it, is a lot of the decisions are made at the city level and planning, like staff, planners in council, and riders are not consulted. This has been a major issue for years, and Stuart outlined some examples. I would propose, and this is going to sound familiar because I propose the same thing with the para-parity issue, the paratranspo issue, that a task force be put together long-term that involves the groups that are here today, even para-parity, healthy transportation, the Ottawa Transit Riders, again, Ecology Ottawa, I'm sure I'm forgetting people. We all have members that are riding the bus every day, and we need to be consulted on a lot of these decisions that are being made and that affect our lives. I know right now we're dealing with the LRT, and of course we all want that to work. We all want solutions, but there are other things we need to be considering that I would like to see flagged somewhere on the agenda at these meetings or in the terms of council priorities. I want to see a commitment to community consultations. When OC Transpo makes changes to routes in neighborhoods without consulting the riders, or worse, they consult and then they don't listen and make changes that they already had decided on anyways. We've seen that happen multiple times in Vanier. I want to see talking to people about how we can improve communications, because the GPS system, even when it's up and working, is not reliable. If you search Twitter, you'll see the hashtag HocusTransPocus. That's because buses are showing up in the GPS system and then vanishing before they reach the stop. This kind of thing is unacceptable. You can't plan your route if you can't rely on being able to tell when your bus is coming. Again, talk to the riders. We'll tell you what the problems are. Things like the Equipass. The number of people registered are far lower than the number of people that are actually allowed to have it. I'm missing the word, but there's a reason for that. It is a bureaucratic red tape nightmare. I spent some time last night reading the FAQs. I work in the government, so I have a bit of a leg up on understanding the bureaucraties that's in that and the requirements, but the people that we want to use the Equipass are not necessarily going to be able to follow all those steps or able to make multiple trips back to city service centers. It requires going back twice. It requires having all of this paperwork. It requires being able to understand who you take what paperwork to. There's a lot of proof of income, which is insulting, because I think that's basically there because we assume people are going to lie that they qualify for the Equipass. The very small minority of people are cheating on social welfare programs, social safety nets. We don't need to be having multiple proof of income. We need to be able to have a checkbox. It needs to be simplified. It needs higher uptake. And again, the Equipass users and the riders will tell you what needs to be fixed. Talk to us. We also, OC Transpo needs annual reporting released again. Right now you can find no stats on anything. There's no accountability, there's no transparency. It stopped, and I don't have the date in front of me, but the reporting stopped in 2014 or 15 because of heading into the LRT construction, I assume. But that's unacceptable. Even in my day job, I do reporting to my director. I'm just a minion in the government. So why a major city group isn't doing reporting to its taxpayers, I do not understand. Given all of that, and I will risk getting my wrist slapped here and say we need a fare freeze, because the service is very poor and we shouldn't be paying more It's ridiculous. And I'll finish up, because I have 48 seconds, by saying that I would also like City Council to commit to some anti-harassment and sensitivity training, because I have seen some very poor behavior on Twitter by city staff and councillors trying to shut down conversations about transit. I don't think that's appropriate, and I think we could all benefit from some training mandatory at the city level. We are all in this together, and we can be polite to one another. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Councilor Menard.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thank you so much for coming to speak with us. I think that's an excellent presentation. The idea of a stakeholder working group is really needed right now in the city. We used to have what was called the Pedestrian and Transit Advisory Committee that was canceled about, 10 years ago or so, maybe less than that, 8 years ago. I could see it working with having students on there as well. Students are one of our top riders in the city, of course, with the UPass program. Our drivers have solutions. So I guess perhaps the question is more to staff, is are they open to creating a stakeholder working group? Have they responded to that request that you've made? And then we have staff here. Let's see if they're open to creating something like that, which would likely lead to some better outcomes for folks. So if staff can answer the question, Chair, that would be great. Or if you have information, Ms. Boswell, that'd be great too.
Thank you. So on the establishment, anything that's related to your governance, that's with you on midterm. If you want to give direction to staff to establish those, or you want to have a midterm governance discussion about establishing advisory committees and so forth. With respect to the speaker, I can tell you we have met. We've had the conversations that she's talked about. We did, you know, for example, on the public consultation, we did have a consultation process in Councillor Flutie's ward about the difficult route changes in there. I know the speaker that's speaking right now didn't approve the process and didn't like the changes. That's unfortunate, but to characterize that as we don't listen, I got a bit of a concern about that. And Councillor Flutie's not here, so you can ask him. But we're open to consulting. Meeting. I talk to Trevor Hashey on a regular basis. I've spoken to this speaker. I don't know what the comments about staff on Twitter are, but if there's an issue, I'd like to know about that. But to answer your question from a staff perspective, as you know, Councillor, we're working with you right now to organize a meeting in your ward. We'll do a consultation in any ward, anytime, anywhere. And I've actually attended those myself also. So we are here to help. But to characterize that as we're working in silos and not listening to customers, I don't agree with that. So in terms of governance, that's for this committee and council to decide. If you want to reestablish some of those advisory groups that no longer exist, we do leverage the existing advisory groups that do exist, such as accessibility and so forth.
Yeah, no, and I'm not suggesting reestablishing that necessarily, but I think the solution or suggestion is a stakeholder working group specifically designed to start to get at some of the operational issues. And I don't think they're personally directed at all, Mr. Manconi. I think what we're looking at is, I'm hoping, I see you're open to it. If it came to midterm governance review, you wouldn't oppose creating some type of stakeholder working group, not an advisory committee, but a stakeholder working group to work with OC Transit. Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't vote on behalf of council. That's for you to decide.
Okay, but from a staff perspective, that's something you wouldn't oppose.
I think you would need to hear what current forums you have for that consultation, and we'd be happy to bring you that long list of forums, and we're open to any suggestion to connecting with our customers. It's all about them, and so if we get it right for them, absolutely.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor King, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to thank Ms. Boswell and the Ottawa Transit Riders for making this presentation, and also for providing me with recommendations earlier this week, which I enjoyed receiving. And I know that they call for greater communication, a fare freeze, bus route optimization, paratranspo or parity with paratranspo, and most importantly, I suppose, greater accountability, which touches on what you're recommending and what my colleague, Councillor Menard, is recommending and what I would like to see as well, a stakeholder working group. So I'm just wondering if you could talk to the idea of greater accountability, because my ward also participated in that consultation with Councillor Fleury on the inputs on bus service. And my feeling was that that was an ad hoc response, and that we need more permanent responses. So I just wanted to get some of your thinking on that.
So first of all, I'll say I'm not actually intending to throw anybody under the bus slash train. Mr. Manconi has been very receptive to meeting, and Councillor Fleury has held consultations. But what I'm bringing to the room, I guess, is what we are hearing from our members is, despite everybody's best intentions, people are not feeling consulted. And it's as simple as we have a consultation, ideas are suggested, there's not really a circle back to say why certain decisions were made, why were, I'll give Montreal Road just as, obviously I live in Vanier, I'll give Montreal Road as an example. Is the community is dead set against reducing the number of bus stops on Montreal Road, and yet the last I heard is we haven't been able to get a consultation on that, and OC Transpo seems to want to go ahead with that. So the community feels like it's not being heard. And there's been other consultations like that as well. So I guess what I'm saying is there's no real circle back to say why decisions are made or not made. And there's just no way to get feedback from the people who are making the decisions. So I think what it just comes back to, it sounds simplistic, is to make people feel like they're being listened to. And right now, like I said, despite best intentions, people are not feeling like they're being heard. And again, I don't want to discourage anybody or make anybody feel like they're being singled out, as I think there is a good intent here, but I think some sort of a task force or working group that was set up long term that collected people in the room that were more at the working level, the like minion level, would be more useful than relying on semi-annual consultations when there happens to be a major change.
So just to quickly crystallize, you're saying you would prefer a public consultation process that is more in line with the provision of a public service than a corporate one that really has user focus groups?
Yes, actually, that's a really good way of putting it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor King. Councillor Kavanaugh, please, followed by Mr. Mills. Oh, are you on?
Thank you very much for your presentation. I want to thank you for raising the issue of harassment and issues of equity. I think it's really important that we just all watch ourselves. I think there's a lot of strain with what's been going on, and I understand that it is hard right now, but we have to remember to be respectful to each other. So I want to thank you for raising that, because I think it's really important going forward to remind ourselves always that that's a priority in terms of equity for all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kavanaugh. Commissioner Olson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Thank you for your intervention. Just two points that I would like to get clarification on. One is, you said that there was or you hadn't seen any reporting by OC Transpo, and I spent much of last evening, part of last evening, looking at statistics on their website about performance. So I'm not sure what you mean exactly.
Well, there are stats. You can find stats, but you have to dig for them. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't seen an annual performance report that summarizes all of the bus route timeliness, activities OC Transpo has taken, ridership. I've seen individual stats being released. If there's a performance report out there, that's being released every year. I would love to be pointed to it. But I don't think we should be asking people to go to the OSU Transpo website and dig around looking for the odd stat. Honestly, last night when I was doing some last-minute research for this, for my, interventions, I got a lot of my information from the media because it was easier to find the information in CBC, CTV, Ottawa Citizen Reporting than it was to find it through the City of Ottawa website or OSU Transpo website.
Okay, and I don't disagree that they could do a better job of organizing their website to communicate that very good information. But they do have information. I was looking at the every bus route has percentage on time, percentage late, whatever, with some very interesting numbers there, very helpful that I want to follow up with the OSU Transpo management on. So I think there is stuff there. I agree that more should be done, and I think Mr. Manconi, I'm not here to defend OSU Transpo. I think Mr. Manconi has made it clear that we are going to get more of that as we stabilize with the LRT. Also, with respect to the consultation, I think it's the view of certainly of many, maybe not all, that the reason that the public commissioners were appointed to the transit commissioner was to actually give a more sort of direct, unfiltered connection to users. And I know that myself, Commissioner Williams, Commissioner Caricato, Commissioner Wright-Gilbert, have received many, many emails from many, many different people and groups and letters as well. I've never received anything from you. So I don't know if another consultation mechanism is necessary. Perhaps we can use ones that are already there. I'd be happy to chat with you about concerns of the Ottawa Transit riders and to respond to emails, look at emails, all the rest. So if I just put that out there as a suggestion.
Quite honestly, I appreciate the four citizen transit commissioners. You are doing fantastic work, and I have interacted with a number of you on Twitter. I don't think, with all politeness, that four people sitting in the transit commission is enough. I don't think you're representative enough of actual riders. So I think there's a role for you four to play, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't have citizen transit commissioners, but I don't think the four of you are providing a diverse enough view of ridership. And I think I'm getting a lot of emails, well, Ottawa Transit riders are getting a ton of emails every day too. And I'm talking to you about what I'm hearing from riders. What I'm hearing from riders is that they're not being listened to, they're not being heard. So I think putting a wider group of people in a room is a better idea than relying on four people who are doing this on their own time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Wright-Gilbert.
Okay, it's on now. Sorry. Thank you, Ms. Boswell, for your comments and for all the work that you have been doing on behalf of riders. Much like myself, you are a federal public servant and have a full-time job. And you've been spending your free time, little of it as there is, I'm sure, to collate rider issues. I believe you sent me a very detailed spreadsheet, which I did review, so thank you, of all the issues that riders have been sending to you. And so I appreciate that kind of interaction. I appreciate that information. And so I just want to clarify one point, is that, or to say that I agree with you that, the four citizen transit commissioners, are definitely not a diverse group in terms of usage of the bus and whatnot. What I will say, though, is that it is people like you and others. There's a lot of transit advocacy groups who message me pretty frequently, which is great. It's people like you who are really bringing up and drilling down into the themes of issues. And so I want to encourage you to continue, for you and I to continue to message and send me information. if there was some sort of, customer focus group or consultation that could be undertaken, would it be useful if, in order to build that consultation group, if we went out to, say, advocacy groups for them to identify people who would be really useful to the feedback?
That's exactly what I would envision happening. So that's perfect.
That's pretty much how we do it in the federal government.
Yeah, that's probably why it sounds familiar.
Exactly. Thank you very much for speaking with us today. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your presentation. Next up, Miranda Gray, please. And while Miranda's coming up the table, just remind commission members, we won't stop for a lunch. If you want to grab food and come back to the table, we just have to watch the quorum numbers. But at this point, my goal is to try to get you all home for supper rather than lunch. So if any concerns with that, come up and see me when you get a chance. But that's the plan right now. Go ahead, Ms. Gray. Thank you.
So I'm still Miranda Gray. I have three concerns on this LRT update. The first one would be an ask to you that you take a look at the midterm governance of how you are structured and how you want to work. You've had some basic structural problems which have not helped in the winning the public confidence in the LRT rollout. Number two is when I look at these updates, some of them are going to be hard to explain in the Twitter universe I live in as being good faith presentations. There is no definition of what a minor delay is or a major delay is. So when you say delays are down, that's kind of subjective. And if you're an individual that got caught on a train this morning for 45 minutes and got no update of what was going on, there were major delays. If you were me and traveled an hour later and there was minor crowding on a platform, there was no delay. You need to control the language by defining your terms so that we're all on the same page. It's lovely that you have the O-line. You could use that. You could use your ambassadors. You could put signs in your major stations defining these things. But unless you tell us, we won't know what you are talking about, and that means we're going to be arguing about what we are talking about. My third question would be, I have some concerns, and this, at the risk of getting the chair's disapproval, goes into budget, about some of these mitigation items and whether they are actually going to be something that we can charge back to RTG or RTM. Widening the platform at Herdman or fixing the stairs because of the wrong kind of tile were put down do not strike me as something that is their fault if it was our design spec and our inspector signed off on it. So while I love the idea of putting all these things back on them, I'm not convinced that's going to happen, and that worries me for the long-term future of OC Transpo. So I love how quickly you have acted on some things. I would love some acknowledgement that some of these ideas came from specific riders, that you engage us and say, hey, that's a great idea. We'll take it to our team. Because right now, you treat us like mushrooms. And that's a problem when you want us to be part of your team and solve the problems we have as a city. It is not you riders and you OC Transpo. It's us Ottawa. Because if we don't have a working transit system, we don't have a working city. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Gray. I just want to point one thing. You used a reference to mushrooms here. For example, the allocation of the additional buses that were announced by the mayor 2 weeks ago, that was done based on the feedback from the riders and the bus drivers. All that information has been, and through councillor's office, all that information has been collected, given over to OC Transport to sort through and see what could be done. They just...
So let me comment on that particular memo then. Numbers. 40 buses is maybe 120 trips in an AM or PM peak. There were probably 60 bus routes listed on that sheet. It did not give me any information about when an extra route would be on my route, which keeps passing me because it is too full. That's the information I needed as a rider, which was not provided because they did not have that information yet. That was premature.
Part of the challenge with that because you said, as you said, there's 40 buses. Some of those buses, if not all of them, were used on multiple routes and different times through the day. That's, you know, I call that Pat Scrimgeour's magic stuff, but the scheduling of the buses where they're needed and everything, they did what they could with those 40. We have more coming the 19, and as I mentioned,
Mr. Chair,
this
if you
even
took
more.
The bus more often, you would know why vague information is not helpful for planning your transit route.
Right. Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Gray. Okay, so we are moving on to questions.
No questions.
Good, Mr. Menard's up. So questions of staff. Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Councilor Menard, before you start, if you could indulge us, There's a question that Councillor McKenney wanted to ask that the city manager has an answer, and it may affect the questions that you want to ask as well. So if you could allow her that one question, I would really appreciate it. Okay, thank you. Can we get Councillor McKenney the mic?
But you're not going to take me off the list.
I won't take you off the list. I just want to get that one question out of the way.
But they did.
We'll get you back in there, okay?
Like in the middle there where I was.
Look, I'll listen to your fellow colleagues, but we'll take care of you and get you inserted in there. But I'd like to get this question out of the way, please.
Thank you. So I'm going to ask one question, and then I'll be back on the list right behind Councillor Kavanaugh. I have the project agreement that I asked for some time ago that was sent to me, and I'm looking at it now, and I put out on social media yesterday, I was quite unhappy that the full vehicle and fixed equipment warranties have been redacted. However, Schedule 7, 12, 21, and 42 have been intentionally deleted. We don't even have the names of the schedules. Is there some way that we can get this information? Is there some way that we as elected officials, well, the public, I'm guessing the answer to the public is no, or it would be here, but is there some way that we can get this information provided to us in a timely fashion?
Mr. Chair, I'll start by saying that any councillor can sit with the city clerk and review the unredacted version of all those schedules in the entire agreement. I mean, that's completely open to any councillor. You can meet with, as we've done in the past, with Mr. O'Connor and read the entire document, see the schedule, see anything you like. As for public disclosure and for the general public to see, the organization, as the City of Ottawa, we are bound by MFIPA legislation. I can't be directed by council to break the law, and it is a law, and Rick, as the head of the institution, is required to receive a release from third parties that are involved in these contracts for the information to go public. Up until this point, RTG has maintained that the groups that they've subcontracted have commercial interests that they want to protect because they're bidding on other jobs, and they bid unique maintenance and warranty agreements for the City of Ottawa that they wish to protect because they don't want their competitors to know what they gave Ottawa versus Toronto versus Calgary. That in mind, I've spoken to Mr. Lausch, and Mr. Lausch is now working with Alstom in particular and Talus, who are the two main proponents that are on those schedules, to work to see if and revisit the decision that they made several years ago to not release it. About releasing it. I think there's a view that there's no issues now that the project is up and running to release it, and I'm waiting for him. I was hoping to have an answer before this committee. He's actively speaking to both those organizations today to give me word of whether they agree, their lawyers agree to release that information. If it is, we'll post that on the website for public information. But the main point is that for our elected officials, you are not prevented from seeing that information and reading the entire contracts.
Thank you. Of course, I'm most interested in them being made public rather than just me going in, looking at them, and then having to also keep that redacted from the public. So if, in fact, RTG doesn't give this information, I would like to request that they be at the next FEDCO meeting, because I would like to be able to ask them that question. I have one more that is very similar.
Is that okay with Councillor Menard, because we're doing this at his...
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Councillor. Because I also requested to see the test reports related to the acceleration and deceleration under the full loading. And RTG yesterday, through your staff, denied that request. So I'm asking if that's been part of the conversation as well, and if they won't release the test reports, which seems highly suspect to me, I would like them to be at the next FEDCO meeting, and I would like to ask these questions of them publicly? Because I understand this is not under transit's purview, but you know, I think that the public is looking for information, and the fact that RTG is holding it back from the city has got to be confronted, and we need answers from them. So I'm just asking, was that also requested of them? And if so, and they said no, or if not, can we ensure that they're here in front of us at the next FEDCO meeting?
Are you able to answer that now, Mr. Manconi, or should we refer it to FEDCO?
Chair, it was not part of the discussion, but as the city manager just acknowledged, there's a shift occurring at RTG where they understand, right? And so I would ask for that Mr. Kanellakis and I will include that in the discussion point with Mr. Lausch to see if he's prepared to release that. And again, we're just complying with the law and protecting our interests, the interests of taxpayers and yourselves. And we'll have that discussion and put it in the hopper with them. And failing that, if you choose to ask RTG representatives to be at FEDCO, we can do that too.
Okay, so just for the record, I am asking them if we don't get the information.
Right.
Is that good?
Okay, thank you. Council Menard, for giving her your first 2.5 minutes. Go ahead. Can we get Council Menard a microphone?
Yeah, thanks very much. I don't think I'll need the full 5 minutes. We'll see. I just want to start on the replacement buses that we're going to be used for stage two. We're saying we're going to use those in the interim for the replacement service of the Confederation line when necessary. I think that's my understanding is correct. So it has to do with the O train shutdown, and those buses would have been used for that. Can you just clarify, Mr. McConaughey?
So we have a lot of buses coming in. We have buses coming in, high-capacity buses for the detours for the shutdown of the Trillium line. That's not what these are. We have replacement buses coming in for our normal 40-foot fleet. And what Nova Bus did is they said they could get those to us sooner. So these are replacement buses. So rather than having to go into the hybrids, as an example, which would be very costly, regenerate them, get it inspected, and so forth, Nova has stepped out, has said, we can get you your replacement buses a bit earlier, and hence the December launch of those 20.
Okay, that helps clarify. And so there'll be no effect. The O-Train is scheduled to shut down April of 2020. Where those buses that are going to be replacing that truck, where are they coming from and timeline there?
Those are double-decker buses that are coming through from Alexander Dennis, and those are on track, so we're not touching the we understand the sensitivity of the Trillium line shutdown, the enhanced routes that yourself and Councillor Brockington are looking for, so that's not, we're not interfering in that at all.
Okay, thanks for clarifying on that. We bought more of the same rail cars for parts of Stage 2 before Stage 1 was running. Can you clarify if we are contractually able to cancel that order or not? Start with that.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to get into that. I think those are FEDCO discussions in terms of because it'll just turn into a deeper dive into the legality of those things and so forth. So
agreed.
I'm trying FEDCO. To be obtuse here. I think you're into the FEDCO space.
Okay. What is our warranty on the trains as it stands right now?
So Mr. Morgan's away. Unfortunately, Gary doesn't have the specifics on the warranty. There is a warranty program on it. We will email you that information.
Okay. So you'll email it within?
I'll commit to tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I want to get clarification on the cost we're looking at, because the maintenance cost came out the other day. So we signed the 30-year maintenance deal for Stage 1, 27-year for Stage 2. Can that maintenance deal be amended or canceled? Can a different maintenance group be selected? And if so, what would be the financial penalty or not?
Again, Mr. Chair, you're getting into that space, and that was a motion that was approved by council. You're into the FEDCO space. Anything associated with the contract, the terms, those things are all FEDCO discussions.
Well, I'm speaking about maintenance for Stage 1. We have a 30-year maintenance deal. We had it in a presentation last meeting, Chair, that we spend $4 to $5 million every month for Stage 1. I'm wondering, we're locked in for 30 years, but I'm wondering the flexibility of that maintenance deal. So I'd ask that that question be answered.
Councillor, we're trying to move the issues with the contracts and how things were planned back to FEDCO, where all that took place. It didn't take place at the Transit Commission. You know, the former chair sitting right beside you, he can tell you that that wasn't part of their mandate. So if you could please respect the decision that your answers will come to you at FEDCO if you want to ask those questions there. Here, we're trying to stick with the current operational pieces if possible.
Okay, well, that's disappointing. Is there an LRT item on FEDCO next meeting? Is there even an item there?
David White's here to, I guess, help with that.
Mr. Chair, as the general manager has indicated, the terms of reference for FEDCO specifically include the contractual relationship, the contracts for stage one, for stage two, and the oversight of those. I don't know if that answers the question that's been posed, but I say that is a matter that is within the terms of reference of FEDCO and not the Transit Commission.
Okay, so I'll just repeat the question. Is LRT on the next agenda of FEDCO as an item?
The agenda goes out on Friday, Councillor, so we'll see at that point.
Will it be on there?
So, I don't set the agenda for FEDCO. That's done by the chair of FEDCO. Mm-hmm. On Friday, we'll see what they put in there, the agenda. You're more than welcome to contact the chair and make sure that it gets on there for you. And otherwise, they can do it as we've done it in the past here under other business for the general manager's update for you. Okay, so either way, you will be able to ask those questions at FEDCO, that's for sure.
Okay, Chair, we had another service disruption just this morning, and I've yet to receive a response from yourself or the mayor or Mr. Manconi on a request sent out for several inquiries into city leadership. There's a real demand for information from residents right now. It's not just this commission that's divulging that information. They're all emailing us. We're getting tons of calls on this constantly. And so I'm asking you if you're going to commit to holding a regular press conference every single week on this issue until the issues are resolved. I'm asking you, Chair, today if you'll do that.
What we've committed to in writing is what we've been doing, which is providing updates as quickly as we have information for people. I'm not willing to hold information for a whole week if it's something that riders need to know. So Mr. Manconi or myself or Steve, the city manager, the mayor, whomever has that information to share is trying to get it out as quickly as possible. The idea of weekly press conferences at this point, I would say no, but the idea of having one, two, three a week if there's issues that we have to talk about, absolutely. We're not going to say no to communicating to everybody as soon as information is available.
Okay, whether you have new information or not, there's a demand for information out there, period. So whether or not it's brand new, I think there should be an update every week, and I'm disappointed to not hear a commitment to that today. We're going to be holding an evening public meeting. This is not just in my ward. This is a citywide meeting on the bus system as well as some of the transit system. And we're asking for OC Transpo staff to be present. So I'm asking, will staff be present at that meeting if we request it in the next few weeks?
Yes, Councillor. We'll make staff available if you need us there to help out any way we can.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Councillor Eglai.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. First of all, a comment more than a question. You know, Mr. Manconi, you've said numerous times that, you know, the city is experiencing its biggest transportation change ever. I think everybody, whether they like what's happening or don't like what's happening, would agree with that. I think through any significant change like that, you need guides. So this is just more a comment than anything else. You need to keep the red vests there. They are doing a fabulous job, I think, at the stations in providing information to people, as simply as telling them which platform you should be at, whether to stand back, whether to take your backpack off, stay away from the doors. I don't know what they're costing us, but whatever they're costing us, I think it's well worth it. And to take the opportunity to thank them publicly, because they're out in the cold and the rain and everything else, like, you know, like our riders are. And, you know, unfortunately, some days they take abuse, but they're resilient, they're helpful. And again, I saw that we're going to keep them till at least the end of the year, but I'm hoping that there's a commitment to keep them beyond that if necessary, because they're doing a phenomenal job out there.
There is, and yes, the short answer is yes, we're keeping them.
Okay, that's excellent to hear. One thing that seems apparent, I'm riding the train as much as I possibly can. I'm on there, several days a week, certainly coming to and from City Hall. And certainly there are periods of day, and I think we all know that, where there's a clumping, where there's a sort of everybody seems to want to travel at that point in time, and it seems to be in the morning, focused around about an hour or so, where there's this real crush. And I appreciate not everybody has flexibility in their day. Sometimes you've got to be at the office, you've got to be at the meeting. But what kind of outreach are we doing to sort of suggest that maybe spread your, you know, the possibility of spreading your commute out over a longer period of time in the morning? I don't know that that would fix things, but it may help to alleviate some of the pressure on the platforms, for example. If there was more, a wider definition, if you will, of what rush hour is.
Councillor, you're right. The challenge right now is because of the multiple disruptions we've had, we've been bombarding our customers with information overload. And part of the solution to what you're talking about, because you can time it like clockwork, we know exactly when the peak loads are at various stations throughout the system, is the deployment of the 14th vehicle, which Mr. Lausch, as recently as yesterday, has committed that could technically be done by the end of December. That will give us instant relief. And, you know, we have all the vehicles that they're required to deliver, but just with the reliability issue, the TCMS issues and so forth, now that those are trending better, what Mr. Kanellakis and I have been pushing them is deploy the 14th, the 15th vehicle, and then they have the Stage 2 vehicles that we can use as backup. So we're... that is the hard push that we're doing with them right now. And yes, we could at the appropriate times message out, you know, stage your commute. But I think in fairness to the customers right now, I think we've told them enough of, you know, do this, don't do that. Right now it's all about taking care of them. And I agree with your comment. It's keep the reliability up. You know, this morning Councillor Menard said there was a disruption. There was. We had another customer jam open the doors. It wasn't a technical failure on the vehicles. It was very early in the rush hour, so wasn't noticeable. But even with all the advertisement that we've done, we've had in the last couple of days people off peak prying the doors open, not just holding them, but prying them open. And so we're being very strategic on our messaging to our customers. You know, we got accused of blaming the customers. We're not blaming the customers. But there are people still holding the doors, and it happened as early as this morning. How do we know? We've got cameras everywhere. And to RTG's credit, it wasn't a technical issue with the vehicles. So we're very sensitive to how much information we bring forward to our customers right now. As you heard from Troy, TCMS are trending downwards. That's a big, big, good indicator. Get that stable, get another vehicle launched. We provide instant relief, and that is every day, just about every day we're talking to Mr. Lausch. That's the mission we're on, and he's committed to that too.
So I want to hone in on that very positive little nugget in there. So you think we'll have an additional train before the end of the year?
The conditions on that is if the TCMS continues to trend downwards, and you know how I am with commitments. I'm not giving you a definitive date because I don't want to get the expectations up and then they don't deliver, it's a problem. TCMS is trending downwards. Door issues from a mechanical perspective, a programming logistics, as you heard Troy say, we're doing very, very well. We're doing door isolations. And on any railroad, you will have a door issue. It's how quickly you can isolate that door and go. So we're doing very well there. Mr. Lausch is confident that if the trend continues, he wants to, just as badly as we do, launch the 14th vehicle get that in service, and that helps alleviate a lot of the challenges. But I want a stable fleet. I don't want to launch a 14th vehicle that has TCMS issues. Then we start to go backwards. We're building some good momentum. We want to take care of the customers, keep going. Ridership goes down a little bit in December. We can take advantage of that. We've got to take care of them. It's cold and so forth. So it's there's some positive in all that. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. I guess this question is probably for Mr. Charter. During your part of the presentation, I thought you had said that you had this week, I don't know what the right word is, some sort of a patch had been installed or applied to the TCMS issue. You used the term contain the issues. Have I got that correct?
Yes, Chair, that is correct.
So, and maybe what I'm going to suggest following from that is incorrect, but does that mean that you have been able to determine in large part what the root causes are with the TCM and therefore you know what to contain and how to contain it?
Mr. Chair, at this time, they haven't been able to identify the exact root cause, but they are continuing to narrow it down and to continue to eliminate the different variables that could be causing the issue. So with each iteration of the software update, they're able to narrow it down more and more. So the final root cause hasn't been determined, but you know, we're progressing the right steps. We've seen a reduction in the number of occurrences, and we've seen an ability of our staff to be able to rectify the issues much more quicker, not having to take the train out of service.
So Mr. Charter, when you use the term contain or containment, what did you mean? What were you? What does this contain? What does this control?
It's essentially trying to control the number of faults that occurs by changing some of the variables. But as well, it's also looking at we've been able to get much, much quicker at resetting the problem and getting back into service. But we think we can also even accelerate that even more. So if it does occur while it's on the line, we want to be able to even expedite that further. So this software hopefully will allow us to do that.
And how much control is in the hands of the individual train operator when something goes wrong on his or her train? Can they fix it because they're the ones who experience first, or does everything still go through the central office, so to speak, to be analyzed and determined what needs to be done?
Mr. Chair, whenever an issue like this occurs, our control center staff that are watching what's going on, they know at the same time the operator knows. And we do have RTM, RTG technicians in our control center that would then get on the radio and work with the operator. The operator has a set of troubleshooting guides for various issues. There are established processes that they follow, and our control center staff would walk them through that. An operator doesn't have at their they don't have the ability to use discretion as to, you know, I'll try this, I'll try that. It's very, very regimented, very, very specified. But they do. We do have a list of certain procedures for certain issues. But then they also have access to a technician that's working in the control center.
Okay, we heard a lot this morning about people's frustration with not having enough information, sitting on the train, the train's delayed, we don't know why it's delayed, we don't know what's happening. Are you able to walk us through a typical delay, pick a door, a weld, something, and tell us as soon as the office knows or the operator knows, what are the steps from finding it to fixing it? So the people who are sitting on the trains or at the platform have a sense of what's going on. What, you know, the OC isn't just sitting there waiting for something to happen, but actively trying to fix the problem. So what are the steps from the time you find the problem to the time you put that train back in service?
Mr. Chair, the steps do vary depending on what the issue is.
No, I appreciate that, but it's just sort of in broad strokes. Run us through what would happen.
Okay, so the first step is the operator would get some sort of message on, you heard me refer to earlier as the driver display unit or the DDU. They would get a code that would pop up that would require them to take some attention. At that time, they would call into the control center and advise them that they have this code that requires some sort of attention for them to take. At that point, they would advise customers on board of a short delay and that they're going to be trying to rectify the issue. Then the operator would be working with the control center, the technician in the control center, and would try to, troubleshoot the issue, clear the code. That may mean, like if it's a door issue, cycling the doors a few times, opening and closing the doors. If it's a TCMS issue, it's a series of steps that they need to do with regards to a reset procedure. And then, once that code has been cleared, then they would request permission from the control center to proceed into service. And at the time, they would advise the customers that they're clear to proceed.
Okay. I grew up in Montreal on the trains. So trains have problems. They break down. They stall. They delay. What is the overall goal? Is the overall goal of what you're trying to do here? I assume you're not working towards making it perfect. That would be almost impossible. But the goal is to continue to minimize the response time until you can get that vehicle back into service. And if that's the case, what is your optimum turnaround time, I guess, that you're working towards?
That's a good question.
Mr. Charter, before you answer, please, so that'll be the end of your questions.
Yep,
and
sure,
then
yep,
Councillor Brockington, you're up next when after Mr. Charter answers, okay?
So, Mr. Chair, our objective is to keep service moving as quickly as possible, whether that is keeping that train in service or in other situations, offloading the passengers and getting it off the line into the maintenance and storage facility as soon as possible. With the work that we're doing with RTM and RTG, obviously we're trying to eliminate these problems, and at the same time, how can we quicker respond and react? But our goal always is to get service moving as quickly as possible. We don't want to be troubleshooting on the line and trying to figure it out. It's follow the steps. If that doesn't rectify the issue, get that train off the line as quickly as possible so we can get returned to service as quickly as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question is to the city manager. Given the number of contractors and large companies that we've read about in the media this week that RTG owes money to, is there a concern in your mind that they will eventually declare bankruptcy and be unable to provide service to us going forward? Is there a plan B that you're working on in case either RTG or RTM is no longer able to perform the service?
Mr. Chair, Mr. White can give you a more definitive legal perspective on this, but and we haven't been commenting about companies that have named the city of Ottawa as part of trying to get their bills paid. But the reality is that our relationship is RTG only. Anybody that works for RTG, subcontractors, have a contractual relationship with RTG, and the city is not responsible for payment. And I'll say that clearly, and that's the position we'll be taking for any subcontractor of the consortium. That's their business. In terms of the probability of them going bankrupt, that's something we've looked at, every contingency imaginable in the contract, and that's not something that we're concerned about. There are provisions in the contract for the city to step in, to remove RTM, to take all kinds of severe actions against the consortium and its various holding companies. But when you go there, you're going basically nuclear, and you're creating another problem for yourselves because there aren't a lot of people around just waiting to step in and take over a $2 billion project. So we have options, but right now our best legal and financial advice from I brought people from around the world that look at this into my boardroom, is that that we are not concerned about a failure of the consortium.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Manconi, with Mr. Lauch's appointment as the CEO of RTM, are you seeing better results right away?
It's early days. I can tell you that he is aligned with understanding that the sole mission right now is to take care of our customers by providing consistent, reliable service. And just to be clear, I have final authority as to whether Minister Lauch can stay in that position or not. We have a formal documentation process, including key individuals on there. And Mr. Kanellakis have taken the position right now. We haven't approved anything. So while they've done that move, it's still subject to our approval. And I've been in the boardroom when Mr. Kanellakis has made it very clear to Mr. Lausch, he has one sole mission right now: take care of this city and take care of our customers.
The last update, you were quite firm, as well as the city manager, in saying RTM was not upholding their end of the bargain, that you had to get very involved in explaining what the expectations were, re-explaining. Have you seen progress since the latest update to this commission?
Yes. For example, we all saw that famous picture of the water fountain frozen.
Yep.
I made one call. I didn't go through the chain of command. I went right to Mr. Lausch. It was fixed within an hour. So he thawed them out, got them shut off on Sunday.
The 40 bus routes enhancements, you identified on Friday which routes. There was a public delegation about we don't know what times of day. Is that information available?
Mr. Scrimger.
So, Mr. Chair, the list is of the list we gave is of the routes that these extra resources are supporting. And as we described in the memo, they're supporting in two different ways, at least two different ways. Some trips are being assigned as standby buses at a location to be dispatched onto a route when there is a specific when there is a trip missed or a trip severely delayed. And so those ones are being used day-to-day differently. We have some other trips which we are inserting into the schedule at certain times. When we are certain that it's at the right time, we are putting it onto the schedule, which puts it onto the web, and I'd be happy to share that information, and I have been sharing that information with different counselors as we've locked those times down. For some of the others, we're still doing, we're trying them in different ways at different times to make sure that they're doing what they need to do to keep the service reliable. From all of this, we are building new schedules which will be in place from January as well. So I'm happy to share any specifics that we know at this point, that we're certain that those buses are going to be running at the same time, and happy to work with any councillor on specific questions they have.
I am making that request now for the bus routes in my ward. Please and thank you. What are we doing about capacity issues in the stations? You focused last week on bus routes, identifying the bus reliability issues that we're having in our wards, but there are still capacity issues at the bookends and some other major stations in the middle. We've heard people don't feel safe, that they're physically jammed in there. Pregnant woman told me yesterday she can't get a priority seat. First of all, it's very difficult getting to them, let alone they're all taken. What are we doing to alleviate and address capacity issues? None of these buses are providing any parallel service to alleviate some of the pressures on the LRT line. So how do we address capacity on the LRT system?
Two ways. Number one, don't have breakdowns during rush hour, because that's when those stations get backed up very quickly, particularly Tunney's and Blair. And I know some people didn't remember it or don't recall it. Those are, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, they're very constrained temporary stations. They change when stage two opens up, so we have to put up with them for an extended period of time. So don't have breakdowns. That's my constant mantra with Mr. Lausch. And the second thing is what Councillor Eglai was talking about, or what I was sharing with him, is adding additional vehicles so we increase capacity and we just keep those trains coming in and out of there as quickly as possible. Again, peak periods and so forth. So if the system is consistent and reliable, you don't have that crunching. We're going to do some enhanced flow control at the top of those stairs, particularly at Tunney's. We're getting those station commanders that you approved of, or that you will, if you approve the budget, we'll get in there that have additional authority, including roping off those stairs so we do flow control.
I certainly agree that the, having no slowdowns or breakdowns and a 14th train will help with capacity. I still think we'll have some challenges at stations just with the volume of people. Can you confirm that there is no plan to provide any type of parallel service to the LRT line from some of our larger suburbs and bring them down to downtown in the short term until capacity issues on the LRT are ironed out?
Mr. Chair, I don't want to say no to anything right now. Again, I'm on a mission of taking care of the customer, and so, you know, we brought you the 20 bus plan today, the 40, if you approve the 19 and so forth. I don't want to take anything off the table. If things don't improve, what do we do? So I think you know how I work. I want to just continually be at it. The thinking has not stopped. We've got a whole team looking at what-if scenarios. I'm not saying we're doing parallel service, but I don't want to take it off the table.
Okay. The 20 vehicles that you've mentioned, the standby R1 vehicles, where are they coming from within the fleet? This seems like a new 20. I just want to make sure we're not reducing service elsewhere.
No, I can guarantee you're not reducing service elsewhere. We are constantly replacing our fleet. We have a 15-year life cycle on our fleet, and the last thing you want to do is replace everything in 1 year. So Mr. Greer, who's over on the right-hand side, has done an amazing job of staggering the replacements. So we had replacement buses coming in for our normal bus service, and Nova Bus are getting those to us sooner. We will not be compromising any of the existing routes. So it's just replacement buses that would be swapped out sooner.
There was one day recently where two trains were slow coming out of the yards to start their morning runs. It was a day we had, I think it was the day we had the heavy snow. Has the winter weather caught, not the track cracking, but has the winter weather caused any issues with the train carriages?
Nothing that we've seen so far, no.
Okay, that's good. To Mr. Scrimger, the last report on budget day, you were giving us performance statistics of the Confed line. You had other municipalities that you were comparing it against. I believe the stat you gave us was 96.5% in Ottawa. Was that just the Confederation line, or were you including the Trillium line, which has a near-perfect reliability score?
That was a number for just Line 1, the Confederation
line.
Okay,
excellent. Very good. I don't know, Mr. Chair, if this is in order. I just want to ask, but for Stage 1 LRT, were the train carriages and the station design, the design of both, pre-vetted through working groups or focus groups? Did you allow members of the public to look at the design of the carriages and the stations and provide feedback to those?
Yes, absolutely. We did two things. Remember, we had a mock-up, a full replica of the train station parked at Lansdowne Park. I think it was for a couple of months inside storage there. The other thing is the Accessibility Advisory Committee was an integral part of not just commenting, but they actually changed the design of the interior of those vehicles based on their feedback, where the stanchion poles are, where the flip-down seats are, and so forth. And then we, post-launch, you'll recall we invited, I think I'm looking to Pat, it's hundreds of people from different accessibility, CNIB, and so forth, and you've seen a lot of the positive write-ups that they've given us. So, yes, they were involved on the train and the stations.
Okay. My last question is just regarding an ongoing request I've had outstanding, and that is regarding some service reductions on bus routes in my ward post-LRT. Actually, it was post-October 6th when the actual full transition happened. What is the status of this information? A number of routes in my ward experienced what I believe was decreased service without my advanced knowledge. When can I get this information?
Councillor, we had since November 6th, we had 100 councillor inquiries, and I apologize. I actually sent you the note late last night. I don't know if you've received it yet, and that's on us. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. We had 100 council inquiries since our last committee. We've answered just about all of them. There's some, I've reached out to some councillors that there's little bits and pieces that we couldn't have that, but councillor, I sent you the email. I've sent you the rationale, and I've offered you my personal help in addressing those issues, and so Mr. Scrimger and I are available to meet with you. I understand we've caused potentially an issue there, and if I can fix it, I will.
Thank you. I haven't seen the email, but I appreciate that. And Mr. Chair, I'll just note for the Commission that there is a motion that I'll be moving. I don't know at what point we're moving this, but it's on the plan today, and that is to add LRT transition update to our agendas in the short to medium term until the major issues associated with LRT and bus reliability have come to an end. So I'm just flagging that we will be dealing with this at some point today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Brockington. Councillor King, please.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Just to follow up on the same vein as Councillor Brockington's question, but in the aggregate, in concern of service reduction, how many buses were removed from operation after October 6th?
Mr. Chair, it's approximately 100 and between 170 and 180. I think the number might be 176 buses that were removed from the fleet. I think it's about, I'm going to say about 140 buses per day that were removed from regular service every day, replaced by the capacity of the train. I'm not sure of those exact numbers, however.
Okay. And of the buses which were removed, how many were still capable of service operation?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, the plan has always been it was the hybrids that were going to get pulled, and I think those were, there was about 150 of those that were pulled, and those units were selected because if there was previous reports we brought to the commission, they were not performing well. The batteries had come to end of life. We were doing extended battery warranty maintenance on those. So those vehicles are literally decommissioned, and then there were some other vehicles that were end of life.
So do we have a number on the hybrid buses that were pulled?
I don't know if Mr. Greer has it off the top, but we can certainly get it to you. Jim, do you have that number? Mr. Greer is just walking over. I'll get it for you. We can go to the next question and come back to that if you like.
Okay, well, then how many buses are needed to be in operation for OC Transpo to run what you would consider reliable service in your professional opinion?
The business plan and what was always before council is that we took out that 100 and whatever Pat's number is, about 180 buses, which there's a difference between bus count and hours of service. So the hours of service are in the millions, and that's what we'd look for, because that's what gets to that reliability factor and so forth. There was a business case in terms of reductions in overall costs that we were booked in the budget and your affordability plan. And so we proceeded with the 100, I'm going to call it 180 or so buses. It's really the hours that we're interested in. And from that, we always anticipated with the scope and scale of this service change, we would probably be back to do some tweaking. Now, is the 40 the right number that we needed to add back in? We don't know, because we've had so many failures on the rail line, and we've heard across the system, and you've heard across the system, about cancellations, overloading, and so forth. And what we couldn't decipher was what was attributable to, oops, you know, it wasn't perfectly right, or, wow, we're really contributing to this problem because we were pulling buses off of the main lines to do the replacement bus service. So we have to go through that stabilization period. Your question is a very good one. There is science to that, but we're in the right space. It's just a question of, because we had those repetitive breakdowns, we don't know how far off the mark we were. And we were always anticipating there would be some adjustments. Hence, Ms. Similac and the team did some proactive addition of bus service hours like you've got in the budget, which is your next item.
So I was hoping that this would not be a continuing question, but I'm going to pose it because my constituents keep on posing it. Are we any closer to having a clear timeline on when the transit system will be reliable?
What I've given you today is where we're trending. So TCMS issues are down. That's a very good thing. That keeps the trains more reliable. They do not have the root cause and solution identified. Once they have that, RTG can give us a better answer on the trains. I can tell you that since Friday morning and afternoon rush hours have been relatively very good, and we're getting good consistent service throughout weekends. We're getting good consistent service throughout the day. Things are trending well. I understand you want a date. I don't have a date to give you. I'm giving you all the facts that are at our preview. with a relentless pursuit of taking care of the customer and making RTG accountable for getting that train service as reliable as possible. I can tell you on the bus side of things, we're seeing historic lows on cancellations and since pre-detour stages because of the 40 buses that were deployed. We've had days where we've had zero cancellations, we've had single digits, and 10, 15, 20 or so cancellations. That's on 8,200 trips a day. So you're at 99.5% of service delivery on buses. So we're seeing very good results on the buses. I think the additional 20 R1 buses will help out, plus your budget growth. So that line seems very near future. The train, they have to get the TCMS issue resolved, and they have to get the 14th train and the 15th train launched.
And I appreciate the hard work that staff is doing, but moving in a positive direction does not constitute an action plan. So I'm just wondering, have you received any communication from Rideau Transit Group, from Mr. LaRoche, that clearly outlines an action plan to make these services reliable?
Yes, then that's what we're sharing with you today.
So that's constituted in a document that would be provided to council, that could be provided to council and the commission so that we can see the specifics along with timelines?
So I was just, the city manager and I were talking, so there's task teams, there's work plans, there's, I'm not certain what you're looking for, Councillor.
Well, I think I'm just looking for something comprehensive because I know that my constituents are contacting me about the reliability of the service, and they want clear answers, and the answers that we can provide are only piecemeal based off of the inquiries that we make to your office. I think it's imperative upon us to really demonstrate to our residents that we have a specific plan or that RTG, RTM have a specific plan that they are moving forward with that we can point to with objectives and timelines.
So I think that speaks to the communication aspect of things and getting you timely information. I have a plan going forward to the city manager and the chair and the mayor's office that will give you much more information than what you're receiving right now on a regular and frequent basis. I'm just in the final stages of mapping that out. And so I think that'll give you everything that you'll need in terms of being able to respond to questions. I think what the public is looking for is they'd like to look at a technical task force on how to address a TCMS issue. I don't know, unless you're a rail expert, what that will give you in terms of looking at coding and trending error analysis and so forth. I have a responsibility to give you timely updates, which I'm committed to do. I've heard loud and clear you're not getting enough information, and I have a plan that's coming forward to give you additional information as frequently as daily.
Well, I think transit reliability is dependent upon some of those technical measures and information. Transit reliability can be measured by those specific parameters, including probability of delayed departures, probability of early departures, actual and scheduled average time travel times between destinations, expected time and actual arrival times, and mean and standard deviation of delays. Does OC Transpo measure any of these parameters?
There are lots of parameters. We have data. We have data coming out of those trains second by second. We have logs. We have all sorts of information.
And I suppose then you output those parameters into reports.
We don't even need the reports. We have live. We have one of the best TOCCs, traffic operation control rooms. We've given you all the tour of that. And if you haven't seen it, I'll take you through it personally.
And I've taken the tour.
Okay, sorry. The Transit Commission was through that. Happy to take you through it, Commissioner. We don't need to wait for a report. I can tell you by the nanosecond. I can tell you every door and how long it's been stalled or every train. Live. So I don't wait for a report. The TOCC that we have in here, we can tell you exactly all that information that you're looking for, and I'm happy to take you through it with you.
That's wonderful. So you're saying you'd be willing to disclose as soon as possible as much of that technically detailed transit reliability data
no,
to both
what I'm saying,
council and
no.
the commission?
No, I'm focused on getting you solutions on that. I'm not assembling reports and data and things like that. If you'd like to move a motion to give us direction to stop what we're doing in terms of mitigation measures and so forth, to create the capacity to come up with reports and speculate what people want to see, I'm happy to do that. Right now, our focus is on, we have professionals over at, you are paying RTG to fix those problems. You're paying them, and you're withholding those payments, and that's funding your mitigation measures. It's on them to fix it. I have oversight professionals from around the world sitting in on those meetings. And RTG is paying for those oversight people, by the way, and that's a signed deal. That's not up for negotiations. That was all part of the handover. And we're bringing in additional resources, which they're going to fund. So if you'd like us to prepare comprehensive reports on all those data points, and there's thousands of them, happy to entertain that. Our focus right now is getting service reliable. That's for RTG to fix those TCMS issues and everything else.
Well, we definitely want to focus on the communication, because I would rather receive information from both the commission and from staff than in the media, especially around some of the technical information that would give us a sense of whether we are hitting the specific objectives that are required of this system. What is the process for scheduling routes?
You'd like the detailed process for scheduling bus routes?
Sure.
Would you like now?
Sorry, Mr. Manconi. Can we can set you up with a meeting with Pat Scrimger to show you how buses are scheduled. That's something that's available for all councillors. We're not going to take the time at the commission today to go into the detailed process that involves how they put all their routes together and how many buses go on those routes. We could make it an item for a future agenda if it's something that the commission is interested in. But with all due respect, Councillor King, most of the councillors around here have an idea already from working with Mr. Scrimger. So I would encourage you to do that meeting first, and then we'll take it from there. If you would like to have an item added to a future meeting with a presentation, absolutely. Fair?
Okay. And so then I have one last question. Based on wide rider dissatisfaction with the launch of the Confederation Line and the relaunched bus service, despite notwithstanding the 3% growth that we've seen in October, what measures are being put in place beyond the temporary fare freeze to ensure ridership retention and growth?
Service. It's all about every customer I speak to right now. They want their bus to show up. They want the train to show up. They want to get to their destination. And that is a retention strategy. Now, once I have a stable rail system and the bus service has stabilized, we're going to bring forward to you plans on marketing and promotions, all those suggestions you've talked to me about. We're going to look at every initiative under the sun to retain and attract and further expand our customer base. But right now, it's all about service and taking care of the customer. And absolutely, Councillor, we'll bring forward ideas, suggestions. I've got every consultant across North America telling me how they can win everybody back. But until the service is stable and reliable, you could put as many ads out there as possible. That's not what they're interested in. Take me to my destination and back safely, reliably, and consistently. And that's the mission we're on.
Thank you, Mr. McConey, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Kavanaugh, please.
Thank you very much, and thank you for these updates. Notwithstanding the train issues, I truly believe that they're going to be looked into. But what I'm hearing from my constituents more than ever is about the buses and about those routes that get them to work. And I've had just so many concerns, and they didn't get touched upon with the latest round of the 40 buses. They got missed. Routes like 87, it's one that the mayor says he takes, it still has delays, it still has missing buses, and it's got a lower frequency than it had before. There's a lot of concerns, a lot of neighborhoods affected by that. These are neighborhoods that are eventually going to have stage two LRT, but it's a long ways to wait for that. In the meantime, they are talking about doing other things like Uber and whatever else to find ways to get to work because they've lost faith. What they look at is their overall time. It's how long they had to wait for the bus, and how long it took them to get to work overall. So and that's what I hear about over and over and over again. Since I didn't see anything for those for routes like that in this round, when can we expect to see some improvements?
Mr. Chair, I think I'd offer to that we can meet with the councillor directly, bring the operational data we have, and work through the specific issues that she's hearing about on Route 87, if that works for the councillor.
I appreciate that. And also Route 57, and I've got a list. That is the biggest problem, is the reliability. It is a jolt for people to go from having one ride downtown to getting off and getting on. And so there's still a lot of frustrations with waiting for that bus at the end of the day, getting off the train, waiting for that extra bus to take them to home. And there's still a lot of issues about that. Are we going to see some more improvements in terms of the flow of buses there? I think that people are starting to get nostalgic for Albert Street buses. Bus stops. Are we going to see some improvements at that station?
Councillor, are you talking about Tunney's?
Yes.
Sorry, can you be more specific in terms of what kind of improvements are you talking about?
Well, I guess it's just the clarity of buses coming because people don't know when they're going to come. They're standing there. They're waiting. It's not coming when it says it's going to come, and they see a whole bunch of buses going by saying out of service. And they want to know when it's going to come, and it's just not reliable.
Okay, and I think that's part of the 40 buses that we've deployed, and plus also what's in the budget that's before you. If there's specifics, again, I'll give an example. I was speaking to a councillor the other night. There was a resident that had a problem. It was Councillor Luloff, and I don't want to say it's on you. That's not what I'm saying. It's Councillor Luloff pinpointed exactly the time and the problem location of overloads on his route. I sent two supervisors there. The next day, they monitored it. Within 4 hours, they said, the councillor's right. We're constantly overloading these buses, and we're leaving people behind. We took those 40s that are stationed there. They were waiting for deployment, so when you see them out of service, and we slid them in. And relieve that problem on Route 39 for the East End, which I've been hearing about since day one. And I just, Councillor Luloff and the other East End councillors have been telling me there's a problem, and they pinpointed it. You are our best ears out there. If you have specifics or if your customers have specifics, please give them to us. We're here to fix it.
I have been. I've been sending them all to you. I have people, complain on Facebook, and I encourage them, please write to me so I can pass that on more in a more fulsome way. But I have been. I got a recent response about the 87, where they were concerned about the lateness. And the report was, well, it's because of the traffic. And yet one of the things that was supposed to be improved was the fact that the bus doesn't go downtown anymore, so there should be less traffic problems. But that was said by an OC Transpo representative that was the reason it was late, is there's still traffic problems. So I can pass it on to you, but that's the kind of responses they're getting. And that was supposed to be eliminated with the fact that it's not going downtown anymore. So that was frustrating to see that. So I can certainly work with you on that, but believe me, we're passing them on as soon as we get them. A couple of other things that we've had is I've had a request very recently to actually bring the 95 and 85 back to their original formats, in the case of bring it back the 95. And this is due to people who live in the far, far ends. Trying to reach each other because they're taking three or four buses now to gather, and this is particularly seniors or people who do rely on the buses and have no other modes of transportation. Some people can just jump in their car and do this, but they can't. And so it's so many changes, and that's particularly hard on people with mobility issues. So is there any thought about possibly bringing a route like that back, such as the 95?
Councillor, this is where, you know, we're going to need your help, because you recall we brought the plan forward numerous times, and I believe the stats are somewhere around 80 or 85% of the people will be introduced a transfer, which is a major change to their commute. And we were very, very clear, because I know Pat pre-briefed me when we brought it to Transit Commission, there will be people that will have double and triple transfers. And I don't want to mislead you to say that we're going to reinstate those routes. I know I've seen the emails myself. Could we go back to the good old days and unbake this cake and, you know, put the 90, you know, those routes in? I'm not going to suggest that that is even possible. And yes, there are some people that will have double and triple transfers. And that's part of the compromises, the give and takes on this. The majority of people, when the system is running reliably, because I know I've spoken to them, are gaining time, are, yes, there's an inconvenience. And remember, our value proposition was you're going to get a transfer, but you're going to get more reliable service, and in some cases get there quicker. And we haven't delivered on that. I've been clear. Customers have suffered. That's our goal. But to suggest that we're going to go back and, you know, look at some of those routes, everything's on the table, I guess. But I just know that we were very clear. There was going to be some inconvenience to a very small percentage of customers that will have double, in some cases, triple transfers. I've spoken to them, some of them myself.
Thank you. We'll keep having more conversations. Another suggestion I keep getting, and I and some of my residents were even talking about having a petition on this, was those that go to the Lincoln Field Station and they're waiting for a bus, they see 200 series buses zipping by them, and they're only half full. And they're feeling frustrated because they're already late, they've already had delays, and they see this happening, and they want to know if they can hop on that bus.
So thank you, Councillor Cavanaugh, for your questions. Mr. Manconi, I'll give you an answer, and then we're going to Councillor Tierney. Okay? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the stopping pattern of the connection routes is a continuing matter of interest, both from the customers who are traveling longer distances and the customers who are traveling shorter distances. It's been a point of contention between the view, well, not between individual customers, but between those groups of customers and the councillors who represent them for 20, 30, perhaps 40 years. Should the people who are traveling longer distances be on buses that stop at every stop? Should the people who are traveling shorter distances have access to all of those routes or all of those trips or only to some? The current arrangement, which is that the connection routes in the 200 series run, once they reach the central area, once they're inside the Greenbelt, they run in the morning drop-off only, is a compromise that was reached in 2016, building on previous compromises. Adding more stops to their routes, adding compulsory stops for people to board those routes, whether it's at IRS Queensway, Lincoln Fields, Dominion, Westboro, would be a change in current arrangements, which could reduce waiting times for people traveling from inside the Greenbelt and could increase travel times for those traveling from outside the Greenbelt. There is no perfect solution. There is the compromise that we are at right now, which has been established by trial and error and discussion here at the Transit Commission for many, many, many years.
Well, I certainly would
Thank
like
you,
to
Thank you, Mr. Scringer. Councillor Tierney, please.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. First of all, since we're sharing stories, I have a resident named Zach. He lives in my district, but he works downtown. Avid transit user and really enjoys it. He understands he's not on a regular government route. He works down on Catherine Street in a certain area that isn't typical, but the busing service for his 55, his bugaboo he's noticed lately is he'll wait, the 55 is late, and then he'll see three 55s in a row. Now, I've resubmitted this to you again, and sounds promising. It sounds like you take this pretty seriously based on what you're saying about Councillor Luloff's story about investigation. I'm hoping in these small instances, have you noticed this trend happening, or are we going to see a reduction of this with the additional buses?
My observations of it all is that the change, the scope and scale of this bus change was so massive that we're going to be tweaking it for the foreseeable future, all with the goal of making it better. And again, and yes, councillors have been seeing, and by the way, I see every one of your emails on these bus route things. There's a big roster of them. It goes immediately to staff. I think putting out supervisors and seeing stuff firsthand helps. And they're very, very quick. They're nimble. And so, yeah, there's bunching going on with the 55. I've seen it. When will it be fixed? I don't have a definitive answer, but it's on the list.
It is on the list. I appreciate that. And I do appreciate your real hands-on approach with your senior staff. I've actually seen it firsthand where you guys have personally called some of my residents that are very upset. So thank you for that. I also thank you for not closing the ramps. And as I always get a little queasy when I hear these 95 discussions, because obviously if we brought back that old service, tell me if I'm wrong, we'd have to close the ramps back up again. Okay, so that's not really something the East End is really looking to entertain at this point. We're looking for other solutions. I won't mention any of the lawsuit information because I think that's all tied to Fedco. But I did have a question about something I've noticed with Sevierville stations, kind of one of those odd situations. And we have the Blair crush and the Tunney's crush that seems to happen quite a bit. Have we looked at Sevierville where there is no bus stops? Have we looked at that as an opportunity to be able to say, hey, we have a layup area. There's actually plenty of room on that bridge from my perspective. And say, can we not get some routes to just simply run up Sevierville Road, run up Innes Road, and help fulfill that area? I know Laura's smiling right there. And then in the Beacon Hill areas, Cardinal Heights areas, is there opportunities where we could look at getting people off the train at Sevierville and reducing the amount of people at those terminuses at Blair and Tunney's?
Mr. Chair, it's an option that we have been, I'd say mulling rather than analyzing. It's one that we've been looking at for some years. The councillor makes a good point that it would help to decongest the platform during rush hours. The question that we will have to balance if we're going to do this is this the right way to spend resources, because there would be more bus time, more buses required, and it would be slowing down customers at the times that aren't congested. So you could decongest the station at the busy times, but maybe add 5 minutes, 8 minutes travel time to their trips at other times of the week. That might not be, that might or might not be the best solution for everyone traveling at all times. But
okay, so
that's a good point that we'll continue to think about.
And on that, is there a formula that you can look at that? Like, I understand you want to get the most number of people. I'm not saying a fully dedicated route that run all the time. Maybe it's special runs during the end of day, for example, when, you know, again, there's no stops there. We saw some of the photos, people had to walk all the way down the street to catch another bus. But there's plenty of room there. So I'd like to make use of that room and try to empty out that Blair platform as much as possible. How soon can we get that information back?
Let us take it away. What I need from you, both councillors, is if we bring it to you and you can sell it to the trade-offs, we're happy to work with you on that.
So 100%. I think the whole East would certainly work together.
Take a quick look at it, and we'll get back quickly. Conceptually, and then if it works at a high level and you're prepared to sell it in terms of the trade-offs to your community, we'll work with you on that.
I'm a pretty decent salesman. So on that note, I do have one final question. There was an outreach by Minister McLeod of either financial or technical expertise. I think the mayor alluded to the fact he wasn't thinking we needed the technical. I'd like to hear from you. First of all, has there been any real discussions? Are we talking about any real coin here? It was kind of a great statement, a very supportive statement by a minister. Here in the city, but it didn't really have a lot of detail, and I just want to know, after an offer like that comes, if someone says, hey, you want some money, my first question is, yeah, let's grab a coffee and figure that out. Has any of those discussions taken place?
I can tell you that the city manager immediately organized a conference call that day that I was on with the senior ministry officials. They have stepped up from a technical perspective, so MTO is helping us out. They've also, they were asking if we needed accelerated bus inspections. They'd send over enhanced MTO inspector team and so forth. Nothing on financial, but it was basically in terms of technical support and what they could do and what we needed.
Okay, and have we made an official ask for any kind of money? Like, would money help? Money solves a lot of things, but would money help this situation? Have we made an ask?
I'm pausing because I'm concerned that the message that I'm trying to articulate isn't resonant. Money's not the challenge right now because you're not going to be paying RTM. It's $4 to $5 million a month. And also we have all the levers to charge the mitigation measures to them. So I would say it's premature on that. I look to the treasurer. She's nodding. So when Marion nods, that means I got it right. So far the discussions with the province has been technical. I have not talked money. And I would leave that up to the chair and the mayor's office to do that.
And my final one, and it's only because every time I think, well, if other levels of government want to chip in financially, how could that help? You're right. Like, it's not going to help get more buses quicker or anything different. We can do that. But what about the stage two? And would money actually help speed up that process? If we could shave a year off the East End.
That'll be FEDCO, Councillor. Fair? If you're looking for more money on stage two, that's a question on FEDCO.
I guess the chair has ruled. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor McKinney.
I was actually supposed to be before Tierney, but I waited. Who's going to pay for the 20 extra buses for R1 and for the operations of R1? Is that RTG?
That's the plan.
So what will the cost be? So how are we ensuring that they actually pay for it?
To begin with, you've got a couple of months of non-payment to them at that $4 to $5 million range, and then we've got a bunch of clauses in the agreement. Again, this is an update for council when we get all the pieces together for you of the failure points and how many things they have not met, and it's black and white. If you reach this point, there's a bunch of recovery things that we can do and mitigation measures. They are obligated to provide you a very busy, reliable rail system, and when it meets certain criteria, there's a bunch of action that we can take. That speaks to the city manager's comment about the external legal team that we've brought in.
So, and I get that I'm falling a little bit into FEDCO, but I just want to make sure that I heard clearly that you're going to come back to us, show us what the budget is for those 20 buses, what the operational costs are, and line that up with what the responsibility is on RTG's end to pay for that. Is that correct?
The direction from the city manager is we will come back once we've got all the legal opinions and how all the pieces come together. We will inform you about here's how your all these matters will be funded. And again, back to my slide deck about your budget that's before you today is not contingent on that piece. That's in its separate lane in terms of funding.
Okay. I just want to start off with a very local question. Have you decided how you're going to enhance the service to Good Companions yet?
Mr. Chair, we've been working with the councillor's office and the Good Companions organization on a couple of options. We've been looking at those options to see there's different logistical steps required to be able to put those into place. I'm on track to be able to talk with the councillor or her office about this very early next week.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I just want to talk about the system. I think that you made a comment early on that good rail equals good bus service, and I guess we haven't been able to see whether that is true because to date we haven't had good rail. What data was used to make the changes to the system that we're seeing now? So when we're talking about trains unloading at tunnies, hundreds and hundreds of riders stranded because buses are not picking them up soon enough. Also, you know, Councillor Kavanaugh, Councillor Luloff, the issues that they're seeing in their wards, Councillor Brockington, Meehan, you know, when the system was changed, when the network was changed, how was that scheduling decided, and what data did you actually use to arrive at those decisions?
So, Mr. Chair, that was the work of 5 to 10 years. It started with a council decision on where the line would be built, what its terminal points would be. It continued on to the general policy decisions that were made. I can remember some from 2009 on how the routes were, how we were directed to have the routes connect, how we were expected to save operating costs and buses to free up funding that was available for other capital investment, which allowed eventually for stage two. There was a lot of iterative work as we forecasted. There was a number of forecasts of what ridership would be under different conditions in future years. We planned some of the stations using forecasts for 2021. We planned other stations with forecast ridership from 2031. There were consultants working for the city who were helping to write the what were eventually called the PSOS, the specifications for the project, which we information that we provided to RTG on how many people they should build the stations to accept. We provided information on how many buses they should build the stations to be able to process, to loop through, to sit and wait for their next departure. And all of that work, and there was iteration on this as we'd go forward and you'd find that there was a constraint on land availability. So one of the biggest changes was at Tunney's Pasture Station, where once the details of the land that was available from the federal government became clear, the configuration of the station just wasn't working well, and wasn't working well for the future conversion of that to a smaller station once stage two is open. And so there was a process that Gary will remember very well to completely redesign the bus platform at Tunney's Pasture Station, change the configuration completely, provide more space, more capacity, more throughput, and use the land differently. So this was an ongoing process which followed some policy directions of council going back as far as 10 years ago, and the more intense discussion with councillors as we had the new bus routes and frequencies of bus routes that we were showing people was over those years of 2016, 2017, when we got into that most intently. The data sources were current ridership, projected ridership, ideas of how ridership would increase differently on different routes as improved reliability attracts new customers, also where the development is occurring in the city. And this is work that continues yet for shaping all of our long-term projections, which go into the 10-year capital forecasts and go into how we're planning stage two and capital investment all over the city.
So is the system working the way you anticipated it to work, given the data you relied on? Again, I know we've had some issues with the train, but I'm talking about the entire transportation network, how buses are moving through traffic, how many are available to pick up riders at stations as they're getting dropped off by very crowded trains. Is the system working the way that you anticipated it? Are you happy with the system that you, after 5-10 years, we've landed on?
No, it is not yet working as we had expected. It is not yet working as we expected, hoped, or as we expect now. And the primary reason for that is that when the train service is not reliable. It is not moving people into or out of the major transfer stations at a continuous rate. It's bringing them in more bunched. If there's a gap in train service leaving Blair Station, Tunney's Pasture Station, or Herdman Station, if it's a gap of 10 minutes in the morning, there's people arriving by bus with no train ready to take them away, and therefore they're in the station longer. In the afternoon, if the trains are bringing them in bunched up, or if there's a gap, there's buses that are need to leave to carry those customers who aren't coming off the train. They need to go. They need to carry those people home, the people who are already at those major transfer stations. And then when the trains do get there, there's not enough buses to move them away. The train needs to be reliable, needs to be smooth, and needs to be continuous. And it's when it runs that frequently and predictably, it's almost like a conveyor belt, just bringing groups of 300-400 people, 500 people maybe, into that station every X number of minutes, and we can calibrate the buses to take them away at that rate. When the trains aren't running reliably, we can't. The customers aren't reliably there to be carried away by the buses. In addition to that, as Mr. Manconi mentioned earlier, we expected that there would always be an iteration of adjustments required on the details of the bus routes, as we do after making every service change. We need to see how it's operating in practice, what going beyond what the computer models can tell us, what we're hearing back from customers, what we're hearing back from our operating staff, and sometimes customers change their behavior and aren't doing exactly the same after the service change as they were doing before, and that's totally fine. That's up to them to do. We are in that process, and the 40 buses that are supplementing the service right now are helping to support the routes where there are gaps of one sort or another, and the work we're doing right now is to encode some of that into the new schedules that'll come into place in January. And will that solve it all? No, but it'll move us one step further down the continuous iteration of continuous improvement.
Do we need the, in your opinion, do we need the full 15 double cars at AM and PM peak to ensure that people are, that the capacity is there when riders are dropped off at the stations?
It will help. That's the service level that the contract is based upon. The way the transit ridership and the local economy has gone the last few years meant that we didn't have as many people riding the system on day one of the O-Train as we thought we would. So we know we don't have 10,600 people an hour to move. But for the 8,000 or 9,000 people that are moving per hour in the morning, having more capacity will help them, but that capacity has to be delivered reliably. And of course, as John's mentioned earlier today and on other occasions, putting more trains on the line makes the whole system less reliable, then the benefit of the capacity doesn't come through. So it's really important that the 14th train be reliable, and we know that the whole system will stay more reliable and only get more capacity, and then the 15th train to come after that.
And those trains are ready to go into service tomorrow if we needed them?
So train 14 and 15 is already there. Those are our spare trains, and we're swapping those out if we have an issue, a TCMS issue and things like that. So they're already there. 16 and 17 are there also. The issue is they're using 16 and 17, which is all part of your package, to maintain consistency. So if they have a TCMS issue on train X in the morning, rather than deploying it, they're saying hold that back and use a different train for the spares and so forth. So it's part of their overall fleet. It's just the issue of having reliable vehicles there.
Do you have 100% confidence in RTG to manage this multi-billion-dollar system for the next 30 years?
how do you gain 100% confidence on anybody? Is my response to you.
You have any confidence in them?
I have lots of confidence, and this is what I've told Mr. Lausch and all those CEOs, AC Astrogatos, SNC-Lavalin, Ellis Don. They have brilliant minds, highly technical people. Bring them into Ottawa, get them on the ground, and get them focused, and they've done that. I'll give credit where credit is due. And so I have confidence in those organizations. They're massive. They have a lot of resources. They have a lot of skill sets, and they have the ability. Same with Alstom and Thales. These are some of the best and the best in the industry. And they will get there. They just need to be focused. They need to ensure that they have one single mission. That's the customer like we do. And I believe that's what Mr. Kanellakis and I have been doing for the last couple of months since this thing went a bit sideways on us, is just focus on the customer. The rest of the stuff takes care of itself. That confidence, I'm seeing more and more. They've got people from France. They've got people from the States. They've got people from around the world that they've brought in. And simple things like extra resources, technicians on the guideway, that they're listening to us.
So if we had the option of going out and getting someone else to do the rail maintenance for the next 30 years, you'd stick with who we have?
That's a FEDCO discussion. We have all sorts of options at our disposal, and we can talk about that at FEDCO if you like.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Meehan.
There we go. Thank you, Chair. I want to start off by saying how happy I am to hear about the rapid buses being deployed at the train station. I think that's a great move. I'm also gratified by the fact that you said that the addition of the buses is not going to mean that we're going to raid other department budgets in order to pay for them. I am concerned that with the cost of fighting these lawsuits with RTG to get those funds is something that we don't know how much that's going to cost us, but that's something that we have to deal with down the road. I just want to highlight, Mr. Scrimshaw, that the 75, the 275, the 99, and the 277 are still problematic in my ward. People are standing at Tunney's, like they don't have problems going in the morning like the majority of people, but going home is a totally different story. Just having standby buses at Fallowfield or Herdman for people isn't enough. They are struggling to get home at night. Buses are full when they go past, or they don't show up at all. So this is the issue that I'm facing in Ward 22. So I will again highlight that in the days to come with you personally. But I want to get to the essence of the problem that people have in the city, generally with busing, and it pains me to say this because we've got great people working on our system here, but there are questions that persist, and one of them is, who made the decision, and it goes back to 2018, who made the decision to reduce our bus routes and pink slip our drivers before September 2018?
City Council.
We said, did we delegate that authority away? Did we say it's okay to issue pink slips to 140 operators and reduce those routes?
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Chair, years of planning, reports on how you're going to fund stage two, was very clear from the onset. You were going to reduce the number of buses out in service and make that up with the train system. And yes, council approved that. Pre your tenure, councillor, I don't believe you're on council at that time, but there are lots of reports that went through on the business case and everything else.
But wasn't that contingent on the fact that LRT was going to be ready? In September 2018, we knew darn well that the trains were not even close to being ready. So why did we pull the trigger on that?
Councilor,
why did we allow that to happen? Because that sent a spiral of events that happened that cost us a lot of money.
Councillor, I don't know where you're getting that the trains were not ready. They went through the testing.
Sorry, Mr. Manconi. The LRT Stage 1 was not anywhere close to being launched in September of 2018. We did not launch until September 2019. So we we decided in 2018 to change the routes. That's September. Am I getting this right? Yes, we changed the routes. We pink slid a lot of drivers who were going to be laid off. And that was a year previous to launching the LRT.
Sorry, Councillor, I misunderstood your question. Yes, so we went to RTG numerous times and said, are you going to make the May date? They said yes, and we said we have to change our bus routes, which will cause massive disruption. Commercially, unrelentlessly, they've said they were going to be ready, they were going to be ready, and we went ahead with the bus route changes that you're talking about. We issued notices to drivers. They were not laid off. We just
they don't. I realize that.
And then at the 11th hour, they admitted they weren't going to make it. And so we made the decision. The question was asking you, put those routes back. We said we need to see how long the delay will be and so forth. And we held off doing the final changes, including the $5.1 million investment. So we reached that point where we did multiple checks with them in terms of saying, are you going to be ready? And they insisted they were going to meet their RSA date, their original RSA date. And, those route changes went ahead.
But nobody at city staff went down into those tunnels to see just how close they were to being ready.
I can tell you I walked that tunnel many times, including when it was just mud and rock, and we had massive oversight. Mr. Gary Craig's team was doing oversight. We had independent experts out there and so forth.
But we know now that the trains weren't even ready and some of them assembled.
Councillor, I don't know what to tell you.
It's baffling, Mr. Manconi. It's baffling. We know now that as for the budget documents, that the amount of overtime we've incurred in 2019 is almost $20 million. So is that money that RTG is going to be paying? It's in our budget documents. It's, 19 point, where did it go?
So just to add some clarity, the budget is $19 million. They've spent 25.
Okay, so we spent $25 million in overtime. Is that money we're going to recoup?
Some of it we will be recouping, yes, as that some of this relates to detours and transition costs.
Okay. So, and if I believe Mr. Scrimger, we're using data that's almost 10 years old in order to integrate our busing, the redesign of our big service change with our trains. Would that be right? Did anybody put a couple hundred people on a train and take them to Tunney's and unload them a couple of times to see if the buses were going to be there ready for them to take people home? Did we actually do that? Did we model it?
Councilor, before you answer,
Mr. Manconi, can I just interrupt and give the councilor a one-minute warning, please? Thank you.
Councillor, on the bus side, we brought you videos showing the simulation of the buses at all those stations.
In hindsight, would it have been better to put actual people on those buses?
Councillor, I'm just trying
buses?
To give you the answer. Mm-hmm. We gave you videos at commission with all our regular updates at FEDCO and so forth about the modeling and the tests we did out in the field. And as you know, we had 3 weeks of a bunch of drills, including loading up the vehicles and doing exactly what you're suggesting.
We were promised that when the trains started running that we would see a much improved system. What we're seeing now is we're going to be adding at least 79 buses to the system in order to get people around this city. Do we have to go back to the drawing board and figure this out, how our multimodal system is going to work in order to get people around this city?
No.
But we can't say when it's going to work.
If Mr. Lausch comes to the meeting, as you've been suggesting earlier on, you can ask him that. I've given you my best advice on the trends and the analysis that I'm seeing firsthand in terms of the buses. They've had very good service since Friday. Let's hope that continues. We're doing every single mitigation to take care of our customers who have suffered enough. And I would love to give you an answer, Councillor, as to when. But I don't have that from them yet. We press every single day. Mm-hmm. We have staff embedded in all those working groups. Things are trending in the right direction.
I would agree with that, and I'm pleased with that. Is it clear now, though, that we need to
really
beef up our busing?
Sorry, Councillor, I wasn't finished. It is in the best interest of RTG and RTM to fix this.
I agree, but let's talk about the busing. Is it very clear, do we have a clear picture now that we have to seriously beef up our busing network in order to have this system work?
No, we've beefed up the busing system because of the tweaking with the 40 and the 19, which are mitigation measures because of what's been going on with the rail service. And you have in your draft budget, that's the next item, I believe, or two items from now, you have further investment in bus service, which gives you another 19 buses. That speaks to the challenges. You've seen your growth areas listed in here. And as I've said earlier, we always anticipated there was going to be tweaking around the massive change that we did. And I always do remind myself that there are thousands of people getting home reliably and consistently. And yes, there's thousands that have been inconvenienced with the breakdowns. But we move 320,000 people around every day. A lot of them are getting to where they need to get to consistently and reliably. I'm not excusing the challenges that you're facing, that you're hearing about. There are a lot of routes that are performing just well. And there are a lot of those $5.1 million investments that in the core, for example, there's no issues. The buses aren't overcrowded. Those commuters have great reliable bus service and they're hopping on the train. And you have Albert, Slater, all those streets have been returned to you for long-term investments in terms of making your city what you want it to be.
Thank you. I'm out of time.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Gower.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think if we take an objective look compared to where we were 2 weeks ago, we have seen improvement. We've got a long way to go. I'm in touch daily with OC staff on issues that I see and that are brought forward to me by residents. I think we're still seeing a very fragile system overall, particularly in the afternoon, tonnies on the ride home. But I don't want to focus on local issues right now. The last meeting that we had, this commission passed a motion directing staff to provide some regular updates. I'm looking for staff when we should expect to see those updates begin.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Scrimger has a rough draft that he's finalizing. He's intending to meet with yourself as the mover of the motion and the chair, just to give you an early look at that, and then we're bringing it back to commission.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you, Councillor Gower. Commissioner Wright-Gilbert. Can we get the commissioner's microphone, please?
There you go. Nobody wants to hear my outside voice. So, thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. So, I'm glad to see that there's improvements being made to tunnies with respect to the canopied walkway. I know that that's both sort of a comfort concern and a safety concern with the flow of people, movement of people. And same thing with Herdman. I had seen pictures that people had taken of what's going on with the digging. So I'm glad to see you've got an answer about that. What I didn't hear today was anything about Blair Station. And so my question is that more of there's a statement and then a question. I visit Blair Station every single day. You know that we've talked about my commute. And I actually, on a daily basis, fear for my safety at Blair Station due to the crowding. Some of it is customer behavior. People are pushy and shovy and running onto the roadways. But a lot of that is being caused by or induced by the crowding that is on the platforms, the bus platforms, specifically the buses that are going eastbound. So just for point of reference, I get to Blair Station about, on a good day when I get out of work on time, about 3:40, because I know you like specifics. So I guess my concern is that 3:40 is not even peak time at Blair. It gets busier and busier as the day goes on. And so I know that at our last meeting when I asked about canopy covers and about widening the platform, we were told that, Blair is essentially, that's not possible because the space that we've been sort of allocated there. Is it possible to alleviate some of the crush of humans, essentially, and therefore the safety issues, by removing some of the bus shelters, therefore allowing for a greater flow of people, not all the shelters. I know some people like a good shelter, but therefore allowing for the flow of people. Is that something that could be considered?
Yes. In fact, there's a team looking at that station right now at Blair, and we're going to look at every option, including do we remove, we wanted to move the shelters, but there's hard wiring through there that would have gained extra footage in the back. My next step, and poor Pat doesn't even know this yet, is remove the shelters, some of them or all of them, and yeah. Go to a canopy cantilevered.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Everything is on the list.
We are mind-melding.
Every one
right
of
now.
Your ideas is on the list around the table from customers. There's a
Perfect.
Whole team that looks at this. The senior management team meets every day. It's all about the customer. Can't give you a timeline. It's on the list.
That gives me a great sense of comfort, and I'm very happy to hear that. The canopy thing with no shelters was exactly what I was thinking, so I'm really happy to hear that. So it's my understanding that the current transfer time, so time on a transfer, and you have to pardon me, I use a Presto card, so transfers aren't really in my daily use, is 1.5 hours. Is that correct?
Correct.
Mr. Vice Chair, at most times of the day it's 90 minutes. At certain times of the day it's extended to 105 minutes when buses are less frequent.
Oh, that's good to know. Thank you. So with the delays in service that we've been seeing with respect to the LRT with the trains, is it possible that we could extend the amount of time that a transfer is valid for to 2 hours? And I don't mean on a case-by-case basis. I just mean in general until we get some reliability with the LRT. This could alleviate, I think, a lot of customer stress, and so I'm just wondering if this is something that we could consider.
Everything's on the table, and I want Pat to comment technically, but I wouldn't do that just yet. Hold RTG to the fire in terms of their commitment to meet the delivery. Don't give them relief on that. And so that's on the hopper too, but not for now is my advice. And anything you do to give RTG relief that it's not important for them to meet the requirements to deliver reliable, consistent service, helps them, and right now it's the focus is on the customer. We have a great transfer policy, one of the best in North America. I know Councillor Tierney was asking about that before too, but Pat, if you just let me get Pat comment on that too.
Just before Mr. Scrimger answers, I apologize, Mr. Scrimger. I'm not trying to give any relief to RTG. I'm suggesting this to give relief to our customers. Let's just make that clear. I honestly have no interest in giving any relief to RTG. It is as a relief to customers because it is a stress for them. That's all I wanted to clarify on that. I
agree. It's an indirect relief to RTG because they'll see it as something easier for them to achieve.
That's not my concern.
So, Mr. Vice Chair, just it is technically possible to set the period of validity of a transfer or a single ride ticket to be any length of time we determine. The date that's there, the time that's there now is a longstanding council decision from more than 20 years ago. The window matters from the time that someone pays their fare, which is often has up until this fall been by boarding a bus, or it's now by entering into a station, to the time they make their last transfer onto a bus. For the most part, people can still make that trip in 90 minutes from the bus they start on to the bus that they end on. We've heard of a small number of instances of people who haven't been able to make it, and we've corrected those on a case-by-case basis by refunding a tap. It's going to a longer period of a single fare being valid is going to capture more trips that are now being made with two fares. So in the general case, not specifically about this, but in the general case, as you spread all the fare revenue across all trips, all the fare revenue that needs to be raised over all trips, if we're giving a discount to some trips that are now two trips in the window, then the fares, it'll put upward pressure on the fares. So we'd have to do a proper assessment of it and report back on what it would mean, that kind of policy, and what it would mean for the fare table.
Okay. Mr. Vice Chair, or Mr. Chair, because I see that you've returned, I've just noticed that the timing's gone a little funny on the clock, but I can tell you that I had a minute 30 left. I looked. So my other question is about the dedicated fleet for R1 bus service, which I'm very happy to see that we're doing that. That's fantastic. It's my understanding that this fleet, these 20 buses, will be 40-foot buses, correct? Why were 40-foot buses chosen over higher-capacity buses when the purpose of these buses is to move large amounts of people from, say, a crowded platform at Saint-Laurent where people are freezing to get to Blair?
That's what's coming in with the replacement order. So those are the 40-foot buses that are coming in sooner.
Right, but my question is that why did we choose 40-foot buses over higher-capacity buses?
You don't have the higher capacity buses. Those are out dealing with your customers. So if you want me to bleed off your routes, example, an Artic or a double decker, that will destabilize the service. So these are 40-foot buses that will be sitting idle for rapid deployment.
No, and I appreciate that. My question was, why did we choose to purchase 40-foot buses rather than higher capacity buses?
You have a mix of 40, 60-foot, and articulated and double decker buses that fit into the whole modeling of your route demand and so forth. So you can't, to go from a 40-foot, to go from shorter buses to the articulated or the double-decker buses, which are approaching $1 million, by the way, you would need a lot of money to move up there. So we right-size the fleet for your demands on routes and so forth.
Okay. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Caricata. Maybe just give me a sec. There you go. They're resetting the clock. Thank you.
Great. So I just want to reiterate my point from the last meeting where I stressed that it seems to me that the platforms, the stations were never designed with people in mind. And now as we're approaching winter, I'm getting even more concerned about that. Places like Herdman that used to have a massive sort of building where people could wait and be warm. I appreciate the scaffolding going up, the mats, the little hanger things that people can hold on to in the trains, but we live in Ottawa where it's cold, and I'm wondering if there's any plan to have heaters. I've heard this from many people that it would, you know, make their commute a lot simpler or more comfortable, I should say, if they could be waiting in a place that's warm like they used to. And so I'll let you answer that one first.
Mr. Chair, that goes back to many, many years of planning, and if you want to start to entertain the discussion of heating the stations, you're into hundreds of millions of dollars. You go to other agencies that have this exact same system. Heating large, massive stations such as what you have is just not feasible, or it's an affordability issue, just capital and operating. So if you go to Calgary, I've been there, they don't heat their stations. You can go to other places that have the exact same or similar winter. Minneapolis, I've been there, and so forth. Seattle, not as cold, but they don't heat their stations. Heating outdoor stations of this scale and magnitude is just not feasible. We did do the heaters for the area where if someone needs to sit down, it's a small heater overhead that's it's got a button that they can do that, but that was not part of the design that council wanted or could afford. You couldn't possibly afford that, both from a capital and an operating.
Okay. I'll switch over to bus routes and sort of service reductions. I got an email from a gentleman named Alex, lives in Somerset Ward. I sent this to your office via Jocelyn month and a half ago, and I still haven't gotten an answer, so maybe I'll provide you an opportunity now to ask if the 55 Elmdale was reduced from 15 minutes to 30 minutes, and whether that's going to be returned to frequency of every 15 minutes.
Mr. Chair, the Route 55 is a brand new route, so the service that it runs with is its first. It wasn't reduced because it didn't exist previously. However, as Councillor, I believe it was Councillor Tierney asked earlier about whether we're changing Route 55. It's one of the routes that we're supporting with the additional 40 buses. We're having some reliability issues because it runs parallel to the highway, and as the highway congests, Catherine Raymond, Isabella, and Chamberlain streets can become very unpredictable. So we are looking at a number of ways of changing Route 55, possibly running it more frequently, certainly giving it more support at those busy times. So whether it gets more time to drive the trip because that's how long it's taking, or whether it should run more frequently at certain times, these are things we're looking for in the short term for implementation with the January schedules.
Okay, sorry, it was the 101 Saint Laurent prior to the change on October 6th, right?
There was a number of Route 55 has replaced parts of Route 101, 103, 106, and 106, replaced different parts of those routes. And so as those routes ended and the new route came in, there were some changes. We also know that the reopening of the train changed. Opening of the train along what had previously been the transitway corridor changed a lot of travel patterns around Lees Station, which had been very difficult to get to and from during the years of construction, and was generating quite a bit of the ridership on Route 101 and 103. And so some of those people are still riding Route 55, specifically those who are traveling to points along Carling Avenue, joined now by people who are traveling to points along Main Street and Smythe Road. So we're looking at it, and we have some ideas that we're working on.
Thank you. I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time to ask this question, but I did see some reports in the media about express buses coming back, and I'm wondering if you want to provide us an update on that now.
So express buses means different things to different people.
Right.
Council, yeah. The previous council approved elimination of express routes and elimination of express fares. So unless council wants to reopen that debate and unpack your entire bus system, that's a multi-year journey, by the way. So there's no plan to bring back express routes or express fares.
Okay. And has there been further discussion with the provincial government following their offer to help?
Sorry, as I mentioned earlier, Mr. Kanellakis was out of the room, city manager. I explained that we had a conference call at your request immediately that day. MTO has been very helpful on the technical end of things, both for the 417 and other matters relating to that. And there was no discussion about financial. So the question was, have we discussed financial matters? And I recommended that that was a discussion at the political level.
Okay, I think that concludes my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Olson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Manconi, thank you very much for the presentation. It sounds like things are going better, and what I draw from your presentation to what I'm hearing this afternoon, there don't appear to be new issues coming on the table, which sounds like almost stability seems to be around the corner, but we'll see. With respect to the mitigation measures, we know how much we are withholding from RTM. Do we know how much they are spending on the mitigation measures? The reason I ask is they have an incentive, if I can put it this way, to lessen their losses, to do the least work possible. Is there any quality assurance or quality control that's being undertaken by OC Transpo with respect to the mitigation measures?
No, and I, Mr. Chair, this is probably discussions about Fedco, but at the high level, it's actually the other way around. With a 30-year concession with high profit margins that they can make, it is in their best interest, and that's why I keep saying it is in their best interest to figure this out, spend money to make money now. It's in the early days, and because our thresholds in the project agreement are so stringent that if they don't pass certain parameters, we activate the levers that I was talking about in my presentation. So it's in their best interest to spend money, have the best professional people on the ground, not the other way around. They spend money, they make a lot of money.
Okay, thank you. My next question is about the replacement fleet, the R1 fleet being at the ballpark, centered there, parked there. Maybe there are logistical reasons for that, but my impression is that the greatest call for them would be at Tunney's or at Blair. And in the same way that we don't have just one big central fire station, we want things close to where the action is going to be or potentially could be. Is it possible or would it be a good idea? Is it conceivable that some of the replacement fleet be parked at Tunney's, some of it at Blair, some of it at the ballpark, so that it actually is closer to where it's going to be needed and can be deployed more quickly?
We have a team looking at that. The starting point is here because if it breaks down, what's been working well at Tunney's, not that I want to exercise this often, is the buses just skip Tunney's. They make an announcement and say, do you want to get off? If you want to get off, you can get off, or just straight shot into downtown because Scott Street still has the dedicated bus lanes. In the core and in the east end, it's more of a challenge getting to those stations, and generally it's that we're bridging one or two stations. So we are looking at, do we spread those around? We just, you know, everything's literally minute by minute, hour by hour. We have a spot there. We own the land. Let's put them there. Quick response, particularly if we have the 417 lanes back. But, yes, we will look at dispersing those if we need to. We just don't want to disperse them too much because you want to get that quick capacity there very quickly.
Okay. And finally, a couple of weeks ago, Mr. Scrimger talked about you were looking at the possibility of loading buses at Tunney's Pasture on Scott Street to lessen the crush, specifically in the afternoon, I think. Is that still being looked at, or is a decision being made?
Mr. Chair, it's something we continue to have available as an option. We've not exercised it for a couple of reasons. One is the current state of that piece of sidewalk is in two levels, and it comes out of the station, then there's a curb, and then you go out, and then there's another curb to go down to street level, and we would have to be careful to make sure there's no tripping hazard if we're asking people to walk to and from buses at that location, especially with some snow on the ground. Not that we let the snow accumulate. So we're looking at some fencing there that would guide people to not trip and fall. The second thing is that where customers have an option of choosing this route or this route, we're working very hard to try to keep them together and close. So, you know, there's a lot of commonality between stops A and B, between stops F and G, between stops E and F, and then D and E, so that people can move to one stop or another if they've got a choice of what bus to take. If we move some of the buses out onto the street, they have to be buses where people are only going there, because once people are outside the fare paid area, we don't want them to be running back in, trying to tap their Presto card to get back into the station and get around if they're saying, well, it's either on the street or it's over at stop D. So it's a relief valve that we know is there, and we think about it continuously as an option, but we haven't pulled the trigger on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Studs, please.
Thank you. There's been a lot of questions today, so I think most of my questions have certainly been answered. But I did want to, first of all, say thank you. Thank you for your work. I know it's been tireless and in large part thankless. But on behalf of my community, and I'm sure many others, thank you for sticking with us. To focus on a few of the positives I've heard today that I think are going to resonate well with our communities, the addition of 79 total buses come January, that's quite remarkable when we put that into perspective of what that will mean. And so, you know, I'm sure there was a tremendous amount of work that's gone into that. And again, I say thanks. I know we've already seen some improvements over the last few weeks. I've met a few times now with Mr. Scrimmager, and I appreciate his responsiveness to my requests, and certainly appreciate that I'm starting to see that translate into better service and reliability. And as well as was noted in the presentation, the continuation of the red vests. I think that is incredibly important as our transit users transition and adjust to this new mode. So I commend you on that as well. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Commissioner Suds. Commissioner Tierney.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one final question I forgot to ask. First of all, how are your operators doing? Are they doing well? I know they're taking the brunt of a lot that's out there. And I also had a question related to absenteeism. Just wondering, what have we noticed? I remember it was a real challenge back before light rail was rolling. Has there been a noted improvement? Do we know what the percentage of absentee rate is right now?
So on how the operators are doing, I would just ask that everybody just give them a thank you. They're doing amazing work, yeah. But that's all of OC Transpo staff, the mechanics, the people behind the scenes, the management team, everyone, long, long hours. The operators and the mechanics, because it's one big algorithm, right, to keep these buses operating 24/7. Everyone is stepping up. I don't know if the union presidents are here. All three of them are actively engaged in encouraging their staff to come into work because they cover both the blue collar and the white collar. But if I could ask council members and the community, thank those hardworking staff members. It's all because of them that we're doing what we're doing. And these a lot of the ideas that you're seeing come from them also.
Great.
Absenteeism, it's tough. A lot of these folks have not seen their families and so forth, so we're kind of all over the map. But I know every time we've asked them to step in, they've stepped in, and we're just going to encourage them to do that. But if they hear from you, they see some of the positive stuff, if you're seeing some positive things out there, it seems like everybody's on Twitter these days. Maybe a shout-out to them once in a while would go a long way.
Great. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Councillor. So that's the end of the questions. Councillor Brockington has a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This motion is quite simple. It's to add the current item on our agenda as an ongoing agenda item until the chair deems that is no longer required. And will, as such, communicate to the Commission. So it's a short motion, which I'll read. Be it resolved that the Transit Commission direct Transportation Services staff to provide a regular update with respect to the Confederation Line and related bus service at each regular Transit Commission meeting as a standing item until such time as the Commission Chair determines they are no longer required and communicates this to the Commission. And second part, be it further resolved that the Transit Commission waives Section 83.4A of the procedure bylaw to receive these updates on an ongoing basis and dispense with the requirement for staff to provide separate written reports on these presentations.
Thank you, Councillor. So do we have an agreement to waive the rules? Okay, thank you. And is the motion carried? Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Brockington. Okay, so the transportation services update on Confederation Line and bus services update, is that received?
Received.
Received. Thank you very much.